miss next week, too, if I roll the finance.
Let me look at my schedule, but...
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. I don't have a presentation for you tonight, although I can get one up fast if you need it. I don't really have all that much to tell you beyond what I've just passed out, the addendum that we have here. The draft version that we discussed at Council Committee and you had in your packets on Tuesday did not migrate into your final Council packets for today. We haven't proposed any changes from what you discussed at Council Committee, but I'm going to go through and talk about what the changes are between the Council packet and this packet that I just sent out. And I've talked with the clerk, who suggests that the best way to do this is to, if you wish to vote in favor of this ordinance, I have a motion at the back, and if you read off that motion verbatim, it would incorporate all of these changes. So basically, and this is what we were going to present regardless, what we have changed between March 21st and now, based on Council's direction, were really four different things, three of them a little bit more substantial. First of all, Council on March 21st was very clear in stating that they were concerned about home occupations and that home occupations were going to be charged impact fees that could prevent that essential component of residential life from going forward. So what we have proposed to do is actually exempt type 1 home occupations. Those are the more minor home occupations, but they could be, I think that they are the vast majority of home occupations. Those are those home occupations where you don't have an outside person coming in to work with you. They include home occupations such as teaching music to children, teaching or children or anyone for that matter, self-improvement sort of things, and the like. So those would not have any impact fees, transportation impact fees. We talked to the consultants, and Transpo said that really when you look at the ITE manual and the 500-plus studies that they have done of existing neighborhoods, those existing neighborhoods have home occupations in them. They are a part of what you expect in any residential neighborhood, and therefore the trip generation rates for residential include those home occupations. So with this change, if you're doing a piano teaching or if you're – I don't know which one of you do this piano teaching – that would not include an additional impact fee for transportation. The second change that we made was eliminating exemptions E through J. Those were the exemptions that were for the quote-unquote broad public purpose, schools, libraries, police stations, that sort of thing. Those are no longer exempt. Should note that they're not exempt right now. Our current code doesn't exempt them either. So this is consistent with the current code. That's something else that the council had discussed. Third.
Those institutions are going to be exempt or not exempt?
They would not be exempt. They would need to pay their impact fees. They would also, of course, be subject to SEPA concurrency, so on and so forth. Third, modifications to the City of Ferndale schedule of transportation impact fees. This was the piece of paper that I think Council was really focused on. And through our discussions with Council, there were a couple of questions where Council said, well, why are you looking at it based on the square footage? Why not based on the students or the number of employees? So we went back through and we made some changes. First of all, and this is a pretty important one, based on Council's direction to exclude the majority of the Thornton overpass to Newkirk Road or to Portal Way, by taking out those fees, we actually can reduce the cost per trip from $2,685 to $2,604. So it reduces that cost per trip by almost $100 right there. Second, we adjusted the fee calculation for daycare centers, which was another focus, from the floor area to the number of employees. And as we explained in the staff report, the state of Washington has strict ratios of the provider, the teacher, to the number of kids that can be taught. Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is a little side note. Can we turn on these lights, or are they off for a reason? Okay.
Yeah, they're not off.
No, I think we're going for a presentation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Makes it a little easier to read the fine
print. Actually, Sam, could you turn that back off then? since the daycare centers do have a pretty strict and consistent provider-to-student ratio, by just measuring the number of providers, we know how many students there really are. And it takes out of the equation a daycare that has a lot of space for the kids. If you got five kids playing in 5,000 square feet, we would have charged you based on 5,000 square feet, not the one teacher that's watching those five kids. So that is consistent. It's also something that we can look at anyway. If someone comes in and says, I'm different because of this, we can look at that regardless. We adjusted the fee calculation for schools from floor area to students, following that same rationale, and made an adjustment to the fee calculation for multifamily residential, clarifying the occupied unit provision. Now, there was a question about that. What's the difference between an occupied unit and just a unit? With the unit for single-family residential, which is how it's rated, that incorporates an assumed vacancy rate, whereas for multifamily, there was not an assumption for assumed vacancy. So the occupied unit, what we're able to do is make an adjustment based on 95% occupancy, which is standard for our city. So the occupied unit assumes everything's occupied. If we add in the 0.05 multiplier, it takes it down to 95% occupancy. We finally did some housekeeping items, just renumbered some things, did spell checking, and some other items that do not change the intent of the document. That's all I had.
John?
Yeah, thank you. I'm starting a frame of mind, so you explained this, and I just didn't get it. Dropping from 2685 to 2064 had something to do with Thornton?
Yes, sir. So
the big Thornton thing was 38 down to 26 because we didn't go over. So what is this, again, this $60 is?
The 38, which was scenario A, would have Thornton paid for primarily by impact fees. Council said that they wanted to reserve that out for the future, more or less. So that larger flyover is not charged impact fees, except for a very minor sum for a feasibility analysis, which is something that council had requested, so that we can get to a point of knowing whether or not we want to move forward on that or just kill it. What we also found is there were some related projects, actually really one related project, which was the roundabout at Portal and Newkirk. That does not become necessary if we do not do that Thornton flyover. So that is removed as well. The difference is $81 per trip.
Okay. Thank you.
I know that you made the adjustment for the schools making it have to do with students as opposed to square footage. Does it explain anywhere beyond this chart what it means when it just says students? Because you obviously, I can't imagine it's just for when the school is built, so my thinking is that it would be for how many students the school is being built to hold, not how many students are registered the year it's getting. Like, I don't know if it has to be elaborated any more than just students.
No, that's accurate, where schools being what they are, one of the fundamental questions that the city asks and that the school districts provide is, how many are you expecting to serve? So a Montessori school, for example, needs a conditional use permit to go in. Add that conditional use permit, they say how many students they're expecting to teach. The school districts will be providing their anticipated enrollment over the next 5-10 years or so.
Okay, so should it say anticipated enrollment as opposed to students? I don't know.
It should really say FTE,
the full-time equivalents. And
okay.
But schools are kind of interesting because any of us who've driven past a school and see the portable classrooms, those temporary portable classrooms that never go away.
They're there for 20 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So obviously when the school was built, the portables weren't there, but they roll in a while later, and that's pretty much the way schools operate. It makes a lot of sense. So, you know, at some point you have to say, you know, what is the impact? And the impact's going to change over time. Just like if a business grows over time.
And it can go up or down, because I know, exactly. Like in the Ferndale School District, they're seeing some decreases.
So we might want to say that it's based on the initial occupancy FTEs.
Okay, I just wanted to see it. I'd prefer to see something a little more elaborated, mm-hmm. as opposed to just saying students. Well, I mean, if I look at the chart, it just says students. So if it's the, you know, full-time enrollment or estimated something.
Right. And the good thing is, and this kind of, you know, the schools report their enrollment to the state for funding. So we have the ability to, after the fact or nearly after the fact, verify their numbers that they provide to the state, because that's audited, because that's their revenue base. So
that's
it's pretty accurate.
Quarterly?
Each year. No. Oh, they report them monthly.
Okay.
Wow.
But the official enrollment is October of each year.
Right. And then annually the auditor's office comes in and then checks. We actually grab and say, where's Susie, you know, so-and-so, where's Billy? And so you actually find these people and make sure that they're
so
random.
So you report monthly, but it's the yearly average at the end of the year?
We could
sure.
specify.
Those things have changed substantially over the years. I know there's a major push to get that October 1 enrollment. Correct, but I think they've now changed that to like the 23rd day of school or the 20th day of school or something. So it's changed. I think the number you want to focus on is what's that school being built to?
Right.
Typical elementary
school. That's what I was just going to say, occupancy.
Typical elementary school has a capacity of 550 children. And I remember when Eagle Ridge was built, it was built to a capacity of 550 children. That doesn't mean that they're not going to add portables and take it up to 600 or have unoccupied classrooms that get down to 500. The question I have is, what are we going to charge?
Yeah.
Based on 550, if that's what the capacity is.
Yeah, I would
like to see it personally on what the capacity is.
Rated student
capacity. You
can't
come back later,
capacity.
Can you?
What's that?
It's just a figure you're paying up front.
Can you come back later?
Yeah.
You can.
How many?
I did that at a city that actually enlarged the school.
Well, that's a different story.
Right.
Be more concerned having to pay them back.
But if you had a 550 student school that opened at 450, which is very typical, you wouldn't want to charge them for 450. Knowing that 5 years from now they'll be at 550,
right.
And then it's going to be very difficult to go to them and say, well, you know, we only charge you for 450, but now you have 100 more students, and we need good luck getting that money.
What
needs to be capacity at the time.
Yeah, constructed.
Which is essentially your occupancy permit.
And what we've done more and more in our approvals, because we always send an approval letter, is this use for a elementary school with a capacity of 550 students has been approved based on city review. Any enlargement or increase to the capacity shall require re-review. And we do that with just about everything. So we can say, this is what we reviewed. If you change it, if you need a portable or whatever, why do you need a portable? Well, you have 60 more kids. 60 more kids, bam, 60 more.
So they get it permitted through the city to have a portable, and at that time they'd have to pay more traffic.
Sure. We have to consider that a permanent building. There's no such thing as
sense.
A temporary building.
I'm going to go with Paul next.
I just want to really clarify something very carefully here, because I heard you say it twice, and I know the press is here, and our reporter is very capable, and I don't want the wrong message getting out to the public. We are not eliminating the Thornton Road flyover.
Correct.
We're eliminating the Thornton Road freeway crossing. The flyover comes over the railroad tracks and down to the roundabout. That is still very much on our radar.
The connection to Second Avenue is going to be charged for impact fees. The full flyover is still on the comprehensive plan. We're just not charging the full fees for that until such time as we have more information.
Mel?
What? If a portable is installed, I know they have to get a building permit from the city in order to bring a portable in, and they lift it off of the tires, and it's now, they don't put a full foundation under it. Do we consider that a permanent building?
We do not have we do not typically look at structures that are temporary, where we have to assume that if you put something on, even if you expect it to be temporary, that it will be permanent. There could be the possibility that because the schools do have the ability to project outwards a little bit more than maybe some other land uses, that we could accept some variations in that, where the public works director might say, your permanent impact, right now you're planning 50 more kids, but that's because North Bellingham is closed and it's going to go back in a certain number of years. So there might be that possibility.
That's a tough one.
It's
How do you, you know, if you charge for it, then are you going to give some of the money back when they move the portable to a different location?
No, never seen a portable.
Oh, yeah. North Bellingham, they moved a whole bunch of them from in the city out to the North Bellingham School here about 4 or 5 years ago, because the North Bellingham School got condemned and they needed portables in order to they get moved all the time. There, at one time, there was at least a dozen at the high school that are no longer there.
The nature of all of these is, again, the interaction between the city and the applicant isn't going to be a 30-second, here are your fees. This is really that jumping off point. Here are your fees, unless you feel that there are circumstances that are unique for whatever purpose. And in that case with schools, we would be able to look at those unique circumstances and make that determination.
John and then Brent. Two questions. Before we adopt this, previous to this, I know how we were charging impact fees on homes, residential businesses that were being built. Same way, we were doing it the same way, just with a different multiplier or a different number, or is it just a totally new method of charging new businesses for us?
We have used the ITE manual since at least 1997.
Okay.
However, we had variations in the way that we did it, where we've discussed at length the fact that someone up on the top of the hill has a much higher fee compared to someone at the bottom. It's really difficult to determine exactly what the average fees for different uses are, but I tried to go through and identify what the average cost per trip is, with the hope that it would be about the same for the different types of units. And in fact, it isn't, and I'm trying to look in.
So for example, let's say Ferndale Station was a new project this coming year, all things being the same. How would they experience this process differently?
From what it is now to what it would be in the future?
Yeah, to what we're going to make it. It'll be more, but is it more of an exact science, or we just punch in numbers now, or as opposed to you?
The biggest difference is that since it's not based on the location any longer, there would be the immediate – they would be able to know without even talking to me what their impact fees would be. Whereas right now, they need to come in and talk to Ryan. Ryan does a measurement based on a chart about that big where he – has like 40 dots on it, and he measures the distance between that dot and this dot and that dot and this dot to find the location, then he plugs it in. Then they don't like that answer, and they come to me. I measure it somewhat differently, and, they have a difference of $50,000 for the same use, the same location. It's just measured differently. Ryan does millimeters, and I do inches.
Right.
So there is that consistency there. And
this is going to give us – more consistency.
And
they might appeal it. They might say, we really don't have that kind of traffic, blah, 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 and they can do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then lastly, I was it's in JFK the day after our last council meeting, and my wife said, you got a phone call from a very well-known developer in this town who's of Swedish background. And he said, this is going to kill growth. And my question is, 2604 is our magic number, 2604. How does that compare up and down I-5 here, with Bellingham, Blaine, Linden? Are we in the ballpark, high, low?
We're in the ballpark in Whatcom County, certainly. We would be a little bit above what Bellingham charges for traffic impact. A place like Redmond, Washington, charges about $9,000 per PM peak hour trip. So we are far below.
We're ahead of Bellingham because Bellingham has other revenue sources to mitigate those things.
Two things with Bellingham. Bellingham has other revenue sources to mitigate. They've got a more substantial retail for one thing. They have a lower level of service for another. So their expectations for what their roadways will be are less than what we expect our roadways to be.
Thank you.
Right. Going back to the modular buildings and things, I worked in a building that was made up of 23, 12 by 60-foot trailers stacked end-to-end to make one big building. And the city gave the company I'm working for a permit, but they could only occupy that structure for X number of years. It was considered temporary, and they were able to get, I think, a 1 or 2 year extension beyond what their initial permit was. Then we all had to vacate the building and go someplace else because that was it. And they had to take it all apart, and it was, you know, considered a temporary structure. I don't know if we would want to go down that type of route with modular buildings, and, you know, as far as like a school say, yeah, you can have that on your property for 5 years, but if not, it's considered a permanent structure.
It's tricky. Let's say that you have a business that comes in and builds a structure. They pay their impact fees, similar to G.I. Joe's in Bellingham. They go in, they pay their impact fees, and they are closed. Their company no longer exists after 6 months. They're not owed those impact fees back to them. If the structure remains and there's no change of use, those impact fees have been paid for that structure, and so someone could come in. In the situation where the building leaves, that realistically happens so infrequently that I think the appropriate mechanism through that would be to discuss with the transportation consultants to see what a good scenario would be, something that other jurisdictions have done.
I'm just saying, we're talking about schools bringing in modular buildings. Are they bringing it in as a cheap alternative to building a permanent structure, or is it strictly a temporary thing while they do a remodel in another area? And then if it is considered temporary, then maybe we should have a thing that, yeah, you can use that building for 5 years, and then it's out of there, or otherwise we consider it permanent, and you pay the fees.
But
not necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the scenario of the temporary structure and maybe they're going to build a permanent structure, the fees paid for the temporary would then go to the permanent if it's on the same location, or even potentially if it was in another location where, like the bingo parlor, let's say the bingo parlor moved from one location to another, it can take those impact fees that they paid with it, leaving the existing shell without the impact fees. In a case where the use comes and goes, I think that would have to be.
Yeah, I think because there's so many combinations and permutations, we probably just need to take those on a case by case basis. Well, they won't be that often.
Because the school districts, if it's like Brett on the one scenario, they're saying, no, we just did this portal where we're not adding students.
Right.
We can argue that.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve.
What are our levels of service? Are there any areas that are lower or higher? Or
no.
C.
With C, we're
all the credit cards to board.
Okay.
It's something that council has said when we're done with the planned action, we will go back and we will see whether or not that remains appropriate. If it remains appropriate, we're good to go. We might also need to change the impact fees as well. But based on all the information that we have right now, based on council's vote to go with the C, this is the best information we have, and we cannot expect at this time that there will be a change in 9 months. Hopefully in a year we're going to have IKEA here.
So 2604 on C, have you done a calculation what was on D?
Yeah. That's fine.
I had a couple more.
This is an important one. I mean,
okay, sure.
Do you have that answer? Or do you know?
I don't. I have a guesstimate.
Okay, what's your guesstimate?
The guesstimate would be that reducing the level of service really just delays when the improvements are going to be required. So it's not that we don't still need to improve Main Street overpass or anything like that. It means that maybe the Main Street overpass doesn't need to be improved until 2040 or 2036. So with a higher level of service, it means that we're going to need to make those improvements sooner. It doesn't mean that it necessarily changes the
amount.
It
was a statement guesstimate.
Lower by this much.
Yes.
Oh, way be lower,
yes.
More than that.
20 bucks.
From C to D, that's a giant jump.
You think so?
Well, again, it's a question of how much existing excess capacity new development could absorb before they were hit with any fees.
And remember, the
still ain't going to get a number.
I don't think so.
we set the level of service at C with, and the option that we left the door open for was to lower Main Street to D, not the rest of the city.
Yeah, because that's what the planned action is going to be.
You're only talking about that one little corridor, which could be a huge amount of money, I realize. But that was sticking.
Interesting point. Back to Steve.
And then concurrency, which I think is a little related to this, which is it 15.44130 or 140 that talks about concurrency? It doesn't matter what section, but what is there?
Our transportation concurrency is actually in a separate chapter. Existing language, our existing impact fee ordinance, threw everything having to do with transportation into that one chapter. So it was kind of the be-all, end-all of transportation. In 2008, we adopted an interim transportation concurrency ordinance, which 15.45 or something like that. That is an independent ordinance all by itself. So any mention of concurrency in this chapter is really redundant to that.
Okay, so is there our intent, since it's an interim, to update that soon? Because to me, they go kind of hand in hand, and I always remember Transpo talking about, you know, the four pieces of the puzzle, and
absolutely,
concurrency is a big part of it.
Absolutely. Last week, you may have seen some weird-looking camera-type things at some of our intersections. Those were measuring traffic, and that is one of the things leading up to both the planned action and concurrency, where some of our concurrency measurements are what is our existing level of service, not existing 2008, but 2011. So they were taking measurements, and they'll do it again in May after Main Street is done, so that we'll have those accurate measurements. In the meantime, we're going to be designing that concurrency ordinance, and we expect to bring it to you late May, probably. Right.
Thank you.
Any more questions, Paul?
Just a quick thing, Uriel. I mentioned this about 3 years ago. With all the planned action EIS and the Transpo stuff, have we ever talked to them about doing a time stamp study for local trips? We did this down in Sonoma, where they set up cameras eastbound and westbound on Main Street. Those cameras were focused so they hit only the license plates. And they were time stamped. So if you saw Bingart going eastbound on Main Street at 2:02, and you saw it coming eastbound on Main Street at 2:18, you know that that car went to the grocery store and back rather than going all the way through town. It was a very interesting study, but at that time that they did that, it was extremely expensive. But with today's technology, it might be cheaper. That was 20 years ago.
We haven't talked to them about it. One of the things, the benefits of those cameras is they have it digitized, and so they could, in theory, do that. But I think that the expense of it, we haven't talked to them about it.
Yeah, the expense, because right now what Transpo does, or at least what they did with those cameras, is they put the cameras up, they walked away, they came back and retrieved the cameras, and now someone's actually going to sit in front of a screen and not look at what cars, but see what cars turn left, what cars turn right, how many cars, and they're going to go click, 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 click. So instead of standing out there, they can just kind of do it in fast motion and just watch the cars. But, yeah, I think that timestamp thing would require a much more detailed, a lot of more human eyes on it, so I could see how it would be expensive. Yeah. I was wondering, on the schools, just to kind of close that loop, Are we comfortable with it saying students, or do we want to maybe consider something like student FTE occupancy rating? So it's what the school is rated for.
What it's built
for. Which is our
capacity. What it's built for. Okay. Yeah. So we can certainly make that change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brent?
Just going off on the FTE there for a second, thinking if you had a kindergarten there with the morning and
they still
do schools.
Yeah.
They seem to change it every year. Like they go from full time to every other day.
But if you have a kindergarten that is morning and afternoon or every other day, mm-hmm. then it automatically pushes the occupancy of the actual bodies up, but the FTA remains the same.
Right.
So if you build a school to 550, theoretically, you can have several part time students there, and they're only going to get counted in that 550. They're not going to count them twice if they're half-time students.
I just know when my kids went to kindergarten, it was a morning and an afternoon, so they actually doubled the capacity of kindergarten.
Ferndale School District's all full-time now.
But my main question was definitions. When I was reading through this, I thought we were going to create a definition chapter so we didn't have to have a lot of definitions in the different sections.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh,
is that
separate?
Still
yes.
Works or what?
It's still in the works. I think it's just getting the staff to dedicate themselves to going and doing basically that scrub of putting them all in one section and then being able to refer back as necessary. So it's not a complicated exercise. It's just a time intensive one. And with staff levels being what they are, it's above an intern level. It's maybe below the director level. And that's really all that we have.
Can we start that, though?
We did.
One of the ordinances or something where we created a
For the commercial zones, we did do that. And it may be, and I'm not promising, it may be that once we are done with our transportation-related, that we can kind of put a transportation-related definition chapter in there. Something I would love to be able to do. And we will at some point be able to do it.
Steve and Connie?
So if we're above Bellingham, is it safe to assume we're above everybody else in Whatcom County?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. I'm still trying to wrap my head around our current fees, and I heard you answer John's question, but refresh my memory. What some broad differences are, like up on the hill, wasn't it like 3,600 a unit, and down here it was 300 or so for industrial, or were those some broad numbers that I recall correctly?
That's probably pretty close.
Okay.
I did pull some out. Blomquist Heights, which is really probably the highest, was at 3,985 per unit right now. Down at the low end, a hypothetical one down at Slater and Rural was about 350, I think. So
okay.
more than 10 times difference right. for the same units.
And then you mentioned one of the possible reasons why Bellingham's was able to be a little lower than ours was they had other revenue sources that they can throw into the pot, so to speak. Didn't we recently, up until a year or two ago, supplement traffic by several hundred thousand, I think 500,000 from sales tax? And
that's actually the street fund, which is different than this is our street project construction. So this is as opposed to our street fund, which is the overlays and the cracks and the maintenance. So we subsidize the maintenance of our streets through property taxes into the street fund, and it used to be sales tax.
Okay, and we're no longer doing that.
We now do it with solid waste tax.
We now do it with
heavily.
Solid waste.
Solid waste tax.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was considered to be a more stable revenue source.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Connie?
Yeah. On that whole school thing, so if you had one full-time student, the bus is going to take them, over the roads to the school in the morning and then over the roads, back, whatever. So if you had the part-time, for example, the part-time kindergarten, then you're suddenly doubling everything. So why would it be based off of FTE?
Well, just PM peak, just afternoon. And you're not counting teachers and parents. You're just counting the kids. It's just one metric.
Right.
I mean, you can use square footage. You can use teachers. You can use students. It's just
but
one
definitely
way.
Personally, but personally, they're based more on people.
They're always
versus
on the PM peak.
Square footage.
4 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
And as we talked about before, schools, traditionally, their heaviest traffic is not from 4 to 6, especially the elementary schools.
Typically after 4 o'clock.
Is all at that time, plus the, you know.
It's
that's probably what's being
out.
Captured.
The sports classes get out, you know, a little bit later. And
well, I guess I'd be curious. Okay, if you took a school, take any of the school, you know, whether it's Cascadia, maybe because that's recent. I don't know if you know the square footage of any of them at the top of your head. And if you went off the square footage thing like it was before versus the I was just curious what that difference would be. You know, if you say a basic elementary school has a 550 capacity, you said? Does anybody have any idea what the square footage is for those?
What that doesn't do is take into account some schools might have a dedicated music room. Some schools might have a larger gymnasium. Some schools might have an indoor play area. Or
oh, no, I don't like the square footage idea, but I'm just curious, you know, so I'm going like, oh, it makes more sense to go off of the students. But I never really thought, okay, what does that do? Like, what is that really going to make the differences on the
The manual is intended to roughly estimate the impact. And okay. they just have just done studies using different metrics to determine that impact. So there probably would be differences, but they probably wouldn't be enormous differences. Because they're intended to measure the same thing.
Something like, you know, the logic is to go off of the people. And like you said, I mean, there's a million different metrics that you can use, I suppose. But
okay, John and Brent.
I like the changes that you've made from 2 weeks ago. But Steve and I have both brought up something, and this is my only, this is the hardest thing for me, is that we're going to be the highest in the county. And we've worked hard a number of levels to try to do things to say to developers and builders, come to Ferndale. We're a great place to come. And we are a great place to come. And maybe this won't make a difference, but I'm just curious how the rest of council feels about this, that we're going to leap over everybody else to get to the top of this particular impact.
Well, I hope you realized when you voted for C, that's what it meant. I don't know if maybe you didn't
When we voted for C, we didn't have a final number. You didn't, I didn't, Dory didn't, so now we have that final number. So, and you asked a good question earlier, Mayor. What would the benefit been D?
Go to Brent because he was before you.
To answer John's thing, that it was brought up, I think, at the committee level, as far as developers go, if you're building a house, you're going to pay less. But the big guys that are coming in, they're going to be, I think it was Yori or somebody talked about, they're going to be doing other mitigations and things, so they may not be paying these fees directly. They may be widening the street or building a new bridge over the freeway or something in lieu of their transportation fees. So I don't know if it's going to, where it may affect would be like a Sonics or something that, you know, a small single development may think. But I think the big players, if I remember right from the committee and the House people, are all going to be doing different. So
now, and before I go to Connie.
Right, I got something else too.
Okay. I mean, because you're probably, it's probably pretty sure that we're going to do planned actions for Main, Slater, and Grandview. And then you'll adjust that per development. So it may not be the front line headline of the Herald as bad as it should be. Councilor Goodrich.
The other thing going on schools, I know when my daughter went to high school, they had a big adult education program at the high school. I don't know if Ferndale does that or we take that into consideration thing where we have a whole group of people come in at night and use the facility.
Not unless
if
it's just an adult automotive class, then the school doesn't get any.
Because it has to be, according to this is my statistics when I attended the Windward High School meeting, for Windward to get the money from the state, a a student would have to go to Windward for two classes, and Greg confirmed that today as an auditor. So you have to go for two classes to be qualified as an FTE. So if you're going to one adult class, it's not counted.
No.
It's beyond peak, and you're not counted anyway.
And there's also an age limit.
You'd go around that FTE. You're not an FTE if you're not counted.
And I think 20 years old is the oldest you can be, too. There's even a student age cutoff to count for state funding.
Connie?
I was just going to respond to John's kind of question out there. Personally, I'm okay with it. I'd like to hope that maybe we are starting the trend towards having higher standards. You know, so one of the things people complain about all the time is traffic, and I kind of look at, well, this is a way for us to garner more money to go towards, you know, solving some traffic problems and building things the way things need to be built. So we'll see what that means as development starts coming. But
any more questions? I want Yori and the administrator to kind of throw just a quick conversation about our meeting Friday, because it kind of changes our long-range plan, because that conversation changes the whole concept of what we're doing on Maine.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to bring that up with Councilmember Mattesi bringing up concurrency, and I was thinking about this over the weekend. And the issue, hopefully this is the issue Gary's alluding to. Todd Carlson came in from the Department of Transportation. We spent some time with he and another one of his senior planners, as long as some staff, talking about the planned action and what DOT can do and how much money they don't have and all the things like that. And so they've worked well with us in the past. They'll work well with us in the future. But obviously, one of the bigger concerns for DOT is the interstate system, because they are the agent for the Federal Highway Administration. So when it comes to touching the interstate, DOT has the feds kind of eyes in the back of their head as well. So the issue becomes, if we want to do something with the interchange, and there's definitions about what includes the interchange, what doesn't include the interchange, but suffice it to say that if we want to put on-off ramps at Smith, or if we want to drastically change the configuration of the Main Street on-off ramps, that is certainly touching the interstate system, and so the feds get involved. If you remember, especially some of the council members that have been on the council for a while back we talked about what's called the Interstate Justification Report. You have to do that if you're really going to mess around with the interchange. That's just a federal requirement. It takes, at the very least, 18 months. That's the very least if it's not a big deal. Otherwise, it could be longer. Well, what that really pointed out to us is, if we go to December with our planned action, and our planned action says on-off ramps at Smith and major rebuild of the interchange, we then need to start the IJR process, which kicks us out at least another 18 months. Now, what that may mean, and then this is what I was thinking about this weekend, pruning my trees, was what it may mean for concurrency is, for the Main Street corridor, we might need to adjust the concurrency to some. Right now, as you know, it's immediate. We can say it's immediate except for those improvements that require state or federal approval. So we may, by necessity, have the choice between do we wait another 18 months to 2 years before we accept the development permit, or do we realize that it's going to take that long to get the permission to do the improvements that theoretically the developers together with the city could pay for. Is that what you were alluding to?
Yeah.
So did it sound like they were going to, help us out and, maybe allow us to reconfigure Main Street? Because if we reconfigured Main Street, I think that whole general area could support a lot more development.
Yeah, I got the feeling that the IJR is a required step, not a barrier, per se, because the urban densities for the interstate is 1 mile separation from interchanges, and we have that between Main and Smith. Now, with the IJR, you just can't look at Smith, and you just can't look at Main. You have to go upstream probably to Grandview and downstream to Slater. So the IJR would be looking at that entire length of the interstate and says, if you make this change here, what does it mean for the whole thing? So it's a little more broad, but I got the impression, at least from Todd, that he understands that we don't want to get like Bellingham, where they are so severely limited as to what they can do now to fix their roads because there's businesses everywhere. they would have to buy, I mean, if it just makes it so much more complicated, that he realizes the problems that that has caused Bellingham and caused the DOT. And I got the impression that if Todd had the money today, or actually if he had the money a few years ago, as he's told us, he would have we would have already done the basics of the IJR. Now, we need to do this based on what the planned action says, because that's going to give him the data to go to the feds and say, this is why it's justified. So I got the feeling that, that DOT is going to be a willing participant in this, but it's a long, laborious, painful federal process, which is probably repetitive.
It was still interesting. I think some of you heard me talk about this 40. I found it interesting looking at Smith, where they're, because they've already done the studies, that Smith helps the guide, but it helps the guide at I-5 and helps Sunset. You know, his study showed that adding on-ramps at Smith helped Sunset and then helped Guide Marine at I-5.
Yeah.
And I didn't think of Sunset being an improvement.
Because they found that most of the majority of the trips on the guide start and end on the guide. That's the problem. They don't start on I-5, or they don't start in Blaine, or they don't start, you know, up in Canada. They start and end, so if you're bringing freight, basically, and a lot of people just up and down the guide, which, when you think about it, it kind of makes sense.
One of the things, too, that I said is we really do need to do something like this planned action, because unless we have information telling them that things are different from the last time they looked at it, they're never going to look at it. But if we have something that says we're projecting 1.5 to 2 million square feet, that's what gets their attention. That's what gets the Fed's attention, too.
So it was a good meeting. Grant?
I thought, I remember Todd coming here to a council meeting, this is before I was on council, I want to say a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. when they were looking at changing some of the on-ramps in Bellingham, they were trying to extend the study up to include
yes.
You know, main accident.
Right.
Did that ever happen?
No. It was funding. It was funding.
They wanted to go all the way to Grandview.
Yeah.
I knew they wanted to come up here. So the work that they're doing to all the on-ramps and stuff in Bellingham now
is based on that prior work.
So, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so any more questions? Or we have, I guess, a long break for 12 minutes, looks like.
Work for me.
Okay. Adjourn.
Western and Washington.
Yeah. So we have guests.
Exactly. So got out the last time.
It's just a way to get back.
Oh, yeah, 20 euros. Hey, you're in? I knew we were going to ask that number.
Sorry, I don't think
Canadian. I could come up with something.
I don't think the number would change.
I don't think it's going to be.
It wouldn't go down.
Much. From 2,500.
Okay.
It wouldn't.
Especially after.
Really?
What number would be interesting?
It cost me $1.40 to get a euro.
You would not get because you're allowing that C to D capacity to go for nothing.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's about one.
So it's more than you.
Are you going over Europe anytime soon?
Okay, what you're also doing, too, if you're deferring it, they're going to cost
you. I got like 80 euros.
I don't know about your point.
You didn't plan very well, right?
I didn't know what to do.
Because they were at the top.
They're number one.
Yeah, I know.
Guessing.
You might have to do it. I'm back in the airport.
We were just too rushed.
It's all euro.
Switzerland is still a Swiss franc. The country that accepts the euro. almost invariably don't accept zeros.
Sure. Canadian dollars.
Yeah, they have dual currency. Switzerland's one of those that they'll accept. Swiss franc is zero. Scandinavian countries aren't on the euro.
England?
England's on the pound, but Ireland's on the euro. When you're in Ireland, once you cross into Northern Ireland, you're back on the euro. They're back on the pound. Northern Ireland's pound, Ireland's euro. You want to talk? They're really
great. Anyway, I got about 80 left.
I'll remember that. She's moss is growing. She's starting to grow. She's got to get rid of it. So she was hitting me with a couple of trips today.
Have you guys been to France?
Only
thus far. It's beautiful. I mean, I suppose all Europe is. It's
gorgeous. The only one we can do is
family with a smile.
I know you would like to sound sweet and just be in Stockholm.
I came about this close to moving this weekend. I was offered a job with Dell Computers over there because our company was big into Dell and they were just launching it in Europe.
Norway was really expensive.
Oh, no.
Sweden was modern.
They were down.
Yeah.
And I decided to.
Whereas I'm Danish, so I have family.
They're down there, and there was a civil.
I had a
function. I don't stop. And they kept putting the little
yeah,
mouth exactly. On movies. Here's where you are.
I like that with JetBlue, and I can follow along. Yeah. That's
really? Yeah, the longest one I've been on is L.A. to Sydney. Through Brisbane. We went to Brisbane.
Oh, please rise.
Here.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Ferriott?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Mutchler?
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Here.
Councilperson Zimmerman has asked to be excused. Can I take a motion?
Move to excuse him.
Second.
Okay, moved by Councilperson Hanson, seconded by Ferriott. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0. He is excused. Okay, next up will be our public comment period. Before we do the comment period, our last council meeting, we had a bit of a problem. We went way over time, and we've been very relaxed in the past in terms of our three-minute limit for comments during the council and during all our subjects. So now we have a new toy for our city clerk. It's a timer. So you can actually go 3 minutes. You'll have a beat. I think he jumps up and takes my gavel if you go over the 3 minutes. So try to go from 3 minutes. Council, before we move on to the comment period, I want to do one change to the agenda. We have a new wording on the resolution supporting SSA Marine, and that new language will present it. So let's pull that off the consent and put it down as B2. So B2 SSA Marine, and then the consent agenda is total unless you change it from there. So public comment period, this is the period for the public to come forward and address the council on anything that's not on the agenda, 3 minute time limit, anything you'd like to talk to us like about, it, anything you'd like to
it's got some
questions.
Limitations, but I like it.
There's a sign up sheet there, or if you have a sign up, you still can come forward. So anyone on public comment period? We have one taker. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor?
Arthur Isha? 2147 Main Street, Ferndale, Washington.
to 23 minutes.
3 minutes. Mr. Gudrich, I'd like to congratulate you for stepping up and running for the mayor position, challenge our great incumbent over here. I hope this will open the nice political season over here, where the issues can be discussed and for the betterness of the community. Now, I'd like to... I hope that incumbents over here, four of them or three who can run, Mr. Malpezzi, Mr. Hansen, and Mr. Ingram, will decide to run in this election cycle, and the public will be able to ask tough questions. The incumbents will be able to defend their extended voting record, and people will step up and try to service this community well, just like those incumbents have been trying, I assume. So that's all what I wanted to say. Thank you very much, and nice to be back. One more thing, maybe, since the time is still running. Mr. City Clerk, half an hour ago I tried to access the agenda on the webpage. The webpage, I'd like to congratulate again Mr. Clerk for doing a very good job on this web page. But if you could make agenda items just like you know, on the last web page visible as a hot link right there on the right side. To access the agenda, I had to click the calendar and then very small window which opened and brought us back to the website, and then we had to juggle and so on with no way of returning. So please don't take my 3 minutes. Okay, go ahead.
I just want to leave it's on the council's main section, so all of the council information is there. So if you click on...
No, I was able to get this into this one, but as a first approach to the agenda item and sort of trying to find it, we've got used to this position being very, very obvious, so it's one of the very first things which concern people who want to speak on the half are getting to. So to get in your design, you have to go through the number of loops, and it would be nice to have, you know, just a current council agenda item. It was very helpful in the last web page. It worked very well. Thank you very much. God bless for being within 3 minutes.
Thank you. So on the public comment, can you mark, do you want to wait, SSA Marine? Okay. And then Leroy Road? Okay. And then Norbert Rocha?
I'm actually going to be talking, I would like to ask some questions about SSA Marine, but okay.
Oh, yeah, sure, perfect. Yeah, you can talk whatever you like. Dave Warren? Wait. Okay. Kevin Foster?
Get out of here.
Wait. Okay. Fred Eldred? Okay. Okay, any more for the public comment period? Anyone want to talk on the public comment period? Seeing none. Okay, Council, we could vote on the consent agenda pulling off the SSA Marine.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Councilperson Ingram, seconded by Hansen. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay, going down to B2, have you passed these out?
Yes.
Okay, this is the new resolution supporting SSA Marine, and we have some people signed up to talk about it. I'll read it here. Whereas SSA Marine has proposed the siting of a bulk commodities export terminal at Cherry Point in Whatcom County, and whereas this project has the potential to add to the economy of Whatcom County in general and the city of Ferndale in particular through short-term construction jobs and long-term permanent employment. And whereas this project is a culmination of many years of advanced planning and preparation, and whereas this project will be subject to extensive environmental review, including an environmental impact statement, and whereas this type of industrial project has the ability to broaden the local economy and spur other related economic development subject to appropriate environmental mitigation and measures, and whereas it is the city's belief that this project will bring many benefits to our local citizens, now therefore the City Council of the City of Ferndale do hereby resolve that the Gateway Pacific Terminal Project Cherry Point is hereby supported by the City Council of the City of Ferndale, Washington. Comments by Council before we open up the audience? Seeing none. Okay. I'm going to go, so we'll go first on the list, and Mr. Mark Lowry. Oh, okay, great. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lowry, 2442 Pheasant Way, Ferndale. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen. I rise in support of the resolution to support SSA Marine. I speak for the Amalgamated Transit Union. I'm the president. We are a public entity supported by tax dollars. I live in Ferndale. Three of my four officers live in Ferndale. A disproportionately high percentage of my membership live in Ferndale. We are Ferndale. Like many other public agencies, we're supported by tax dollars which have imploded, and we struggle to make the resources that we have left meet the need that we have to make. We're facing another round of draconian cuts unless something happens. This project on itself, by itself, can remake the landscape in Whatcom County and save agencies like the one that I work for a great deal of heartache down the road. Beyond that, I'm the incoming president of the Northwest Washington Central Labor Council, tasked to speak for labor in this county, Skagit, and in Island County. We need jobs, and we need them badly. And this will put 1,700 construction jobs, high-wage jobs, in Ferndale for 2 years. This will put up to 300 high-wage jobs permanently on site. The ripple effects of this will come out through the community and will inject large amounts of dollars that we desperately need. If it isn't this project, what's it going to be? We are hurting. We're hurting bad. We need jobs. We need jobs now. And that, I'll just terminate my remarks. Please, I'll ask for you to support this resolution. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Thanks, sir.
I'd like to point out that Mark is also has just received the award as the Employee of the Year, Mark. Is that what it was called?
Yes.
At the Whatcom Transportation Authority.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Okay, Leroy Rode. Did I pronounce that right?
Oh, Brody.
Brody. Welcome, sir.
I'm a little shorter. Anyway, my name is Leroy Rode. I live at 4961 Noon Road, a little bit outside of Ferndale, but I am a lifelong resident of Whatcom County, born and raised here, plan to die here. I've been a longshoreman here in Bellingham for over 33 years. I am the current president of the Local 7 here. I'd just like you to know that there is a viable workforce of longshoremen here in Whatcom County, and we're very eager to see, you know, this take off and come to fruition. Our numbers are down, but if this does go in, as I hope it will, our numbers will expand dramatically. And I think most people realize that longshoremen do okay. We have good job and good benefits, and it's tough to beat. I believe that the project does fit the needs of this community, and I believe it fits even more so that the needs of the state and the nation. You know, the hype seems to be on coal right now because that's kind of the hot commodity. But like I addressed the county council, coal may be the hot commodity right now, but it may be grain or some other commodity down the road, and that's another good thing about this particular project out here is it can handle multiple commodities, and it can change as the markets change. So it's a sound design, and it's a good plan. So anyway, I guess that kind of sums up what I just would like to. I'm in hopes that you guys will get behind this and support it, and I think it will be a positive thing for this community. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, next up, Norbert Rocha.
Norbert Rocha, 2147 Main Street, Ferndale. Hi. So I guess first of all, I think this is a pretty good idea, the Gateway Terminal. It's strategic. It's something that will last a long time. It's something that will stay with the community and certainly offer us some opportunities going forward and give us options later on. I was told that there was some presentations that took place, I think, the last time. I didn't have the chance to come here. I was busy. But I was a little bit curious. It seems as though this is going to increase traffic on the trainways that we have that run through Ferndale. Is that true?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Councilman, want to answer that? Councilperson Ingram?
The presenters that were here at the last council meeting, basically you can take their data in a couple of directions. It will possibly increase northbound train traffic a slight bit, maybe, in the long term. It will almost assuredly decrease southbound train traffic by a good portion because there's a commodity that is created at BP Cherry Point. They ship it south on the rail. They would then hence ship it straight across the yard into the Cherry Point facility and not have any train traffic coming south.
So we wouldn't have any, let's say, on the or any increases on the 2nd Avenue area or the Slater Road area?
You might over the years, but it would be several years. So, they don't anticipate opening the plant at capacity.
Mm-hmm.
The presentation said they'll open the plant probably at 50% capacity and then ramp it up over the next 3 to 5 years. So
I was sort of curious. It sounds as you guys had a little bit of time to think about it. And the mayor, I've heard, has endorsed the project, so it sounds like he's probably thought about the applicable problems that this might present. I'm curious, what's the sort of strategy to deal with the eventual increase with traffic? Is there some sort of intervention on Main Street?
Well, I'll just say that right now, total train traffic in Whatcom County is down.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not at capacity. Our peak was, I believe, and Dave, I don't know, you've probably attended many presentations. I think our peak traffic on train was 2002, and we haven't reached that level. We're down now, and so this project may take us back to where our peak was
along
in 2002, but they don't project to go over what our peak was. So that's the statements of, and certainly people are entitled to all their opinions, but the opinion that we're going to see this giant increase in train or rail traffic, that remains to be seen.
Okay. Well, in that case, I guess I'm throwing my support behind the project. Go for it. Like, it sounds like a good thing. It sounds like we're not going to see problems for a number of years, and I mean, it sounds like from the data you guys have been able to present, sounds like a pretty good thing, at least in the medium term, right?
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich first. I hope I got who was there first.
One other thing too is for folks to remember is that some of the train traffic that's going north now is going up into Canada, will be pulled off here in Whatcom County, so that, you know, we're going to be exporting the stuff that is now going to Canada, so it'll be a benefit. So, yeah, there may be some increase down the road, but some of the stuff that's leaving the country now will leave through us instead of leaving through Canada.
Cool.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Norbert, I think this is the first time you've spoken to this body since you become a U.S. citizen, and I want to congratulate you, and I think the rest of us do, too.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's a privilege and an honor. The among you finally is equal, you know. Yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity, and good luck on the vote.
Before Mr. Warren comes up, I will relate to, we had a Canadian developer stop at City Hall, and he owns property in Whatcom County. But his son-in-law that was with him is an engineer at the Tawasin coal transport. And this was information that I didn't know, and he said, well, Mr. Mayor, Tawasin doesn't plan to just let this business go away. That seems to be a fact that people forget, is that probably those rail cars that were going by us making noise a second ago possibly could have been filled with coal.
They were.
And his statement was, Tawasin doesn't intend to lose that business. So you're going to have coal cars going through there. We're going to try to do the environmental changes that SSA Marine is proposing so we get more of that business. And I go, well, so it's a race to see who gets the coal? And he goes, it's a race to who gets the coal. So that was an interesting comment that I hadn't heard before. And I hadn't heard that from SSA Marine. Mr. Warren, welcome, sir.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you very much. My name is David Warren. I'm currently president of the Northwest Washington Central Labor Council until Mark takes over in April. We're a labor council between Whatcom, Skagit, and Island County with over 7,000 members. The largest bulk is probably 5,000 up here in Whatcom County. We want this project. We want these jobs. You need this project, and your people need these jobs. This is a private company coming in willing to spend between $500 and $600 million on a project without any help from the state, the county, the federal government as far as subsidies or co-opting. This is a great project. Now, it does have, I do have to tell you, when I sit up here as president of the Labor Council, that is certainly our focus, and that's what we are interested in, is living wage jobs. The overwhelming majority of these jobs, probably 98 out of 100, are going to be in the $68,000 range. It's all going to be local hire. People in this town are going to go to work. We're not going to be bringing people in from Missouri or North Carolina to do the work like they do at the refinery, and the money goes back out. This is all going to be local hire. It's going to be 100% union. And, hey, if you want your businesses to do good in town, if you want them to buy your cars, to buy your homes, to go to your restaurants, to go to your shops, keep your people jobs. Put money in their pockets. We're not a nation of savers. It seems like Americans, when they get it, they spend it. But I also want to make the note that on the environmental issues about this thing, of course the Labor Council is really focused on living wage jobs. That is our whole purpose. But we are probably the most environmentally friendly Central Labor Council in the entire state of Washington. We're proud members and participators in Sustainable Connections. We have people that have worked on Resources Board, resource projects that serve now on environmental programs and policies throughout this county. We want this to be as environmentally friendly as it can be. I raised my children here. My son, Rick, who's a staff photographer for the Labor Council, he's going to be raising his daughter here in Ferndale, just up the street, in a couple of months from now. We want this to be one of the toughest EIS processes and CEPA processes that any company has ever had to go through. We want to make sure that it is fiscally responsible, but we also want to make sure that it is very sound ecologically. We love it here. We raised our families here. Our children go to school here. The Labor Council is not going to do anything that would jeopardize that, harm that, or bring ill will to that. This is a great process, a great project, and if you let this one get by, I doubt you're ever going to see it come up like this again. Thank you very much. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer those.
Okay, questions? Okay, okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is Kevin Foster. I'll call you right in there. Great. Welcome, sir.
How you doing? Kevin Foster, 5938 North Star Road, just outside of Ferndale here. I'm a member of Local 7, ILW, the Longshore Local here in Bellingham. Of course, we really want to see this project go through just for jobs. I'm in favor of it for family wage jobs in the short term, family wage jobs in the long term, plus a tax base. And we're talking about what's the advantage of this facility. And the biggest advantage of this facility is the amount of draft that's up there. They can bring in Cape-sized ships that they can't bring in any place else, almost in the whole United States. So there is going to be a lot of need, and they will get a lot of business just because of the fact they can ship that stuff on those size ships. So I'm in favor of the resolution, so thank you.
Thanks, sir. Fred?
Yes, sir.
We welcome you again.
All right. 13 and a half years in Oregon, I worked with supposed engineering people. Suppose they were government people. State of Oregon is not that qualified. All right. P.O. Box 19 Sisborius Town. Okay. I live across the street when a train passes. The trains keep me up at night. I don't have to tell you. Now, there may be an increase in train traffic. I agree that engineering is about a trade-off between this and death. So we cut the train traffic. We cut the jobs. Increase the jobs. Increasing train traffic. It's no choice, people. No choice. And Oregon has no stinking jobs to speak of. The people getting education, and we the state. You have to decide which you want. I'm not sure it's either job. Now, I really don't care about this. To statistics for the construction phase. This is 2 or 3 years. I hope I don't anger you, labor council people, that 300 permanent jobs, $68,000 a year, I feel it is figured it out. They pay what, $20 million per year? $20 million? Benefits? Pensions? That's why these people buy things, eat out, buy cars, go to the cafe, get their kids in private school, contract companies that do work for SSA. I don't know what the backlog is. Do you know?
Not exactly, no.
But there is a backlog. Can you make a guess?
The backlog specifically on what?
That is $20 million a year.
It's close. I think it's going to be substantially higher than
that. Anyhow, so it's a good choice to make. You have to decide, people. I'm not sure they see the jobs. I'm not sure they see its community do well and they see its price go down the hill. Recession time. Yes. No. A recession is a restructuring. A economy system becomes inefficient. I have to use the utility program on my computer to clean it up. Recession is the same thing. Restructuring. And you can restructure for the short term, and then as recession will hurt, or you can restructure for the long term so you don't hurt.
Perfect timing. Thank you. Great. Okay, anyone else want to speak on SSA Marine? Seeing none, we're okay. Okay, council resolution before you. Councilperson, I'm going to go with, are you going to make a motion to move forward?
Yes.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich?
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt this resolution in support of SSA Marine's bulk commodity terminal.
Second. I'll second that.
Okay. Moved and seconded.
Third, fourth.
This is an important issue. I'm going to go with roll call vote.
Go for it.
No discussion. Any discussion? I don't think I see any.
Councilmember Malpezzi?
Aye.
Councilmember Hampton?
Aye.
Councilmember Ferrier?
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram?
Aye.
Councilmember Mutler?
Aye.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Aye.
And
motion carries, 6-0. Well done. Thank you. Okay, next up is item C, the water connection request for 1181 West Smith. Our public works director will present.
Good evening, Janice Marlega, Public Works Director. The Public Works Department, we received a letter from the Whatcom County Health Department that was written on behalf of Randy Strope, and the condition of his well that's at 1181 Smith Road. And the well on Mr. Strope's property, several tests were taken. It was determined that the well is contaminated. And in our committee packet, I had included the letter from the health department, but I noticed that it was not included in your council packet. So I don't know if any of you are interested in seeing a copy of this at this time. So I can pass those around. Okay. All right. So then.
No, I'm just going to ask a comment. I happened to drive by there. I don't know when it was. Saturday or Sunday. One of the two. We drove by there. It doesn't surprise me whatsoever that that well is contaminated, probably with a whole bunch of stuff. It's basically a mud bog.
Yeah, and Mr. Strope was able to make it to the council meeting tonight, so if there are any questions, then he's available to answer those. And what the County Health Department is recommending is that Mr. Strope be provided with public water. Just because the size of his lot, it's only 42 feet wide, he would not be able to meet any setback requirements if he were drilling a new well.
Yeah, it's very narrow. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely. And so what staff is recommending is that council approve a water service connection for Mr. Strope.
Do we have water in the area? Is it, are we going past there? We service the county yard, right?
Water and sewer.
We have both water and sewer.
Water and then a pressurized sewer line.
Mm-hmm. That go down Smith Road. And so was there a question?
Councilperson Feria and Goodrich.
So for them to hook up, they have what kind of we charge them?
Mm-hmm.
What do we charge them?
There's a connection fee, and he's outside of the city limit, so we would have to pay the surcharge. And then there's also probably an encroachment permit and inspection. and then he has to pay for the actual making that connection to the water, to the water main. But the first step is, you know, since he is outside the city limits, outside the UGA, you know, we got the letter from the county health department. It's just it's getting the approval from the city council to approve the connection, and then he will have to work on financing the connection.
I mean, there's no other option for when something like that happens, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, no, extremely. This person doesn't have the property to have an option.
Right. Right.
Other than not live there. I mean, that's it's a terrible. I mean, we might as well be honest. His option is this or not live there, and he loses investment. So, it's a terrible corner. Councilperson Ingram. Oh no, wait. Councilperson Goodrich was ahead of you. Sorry.
I think I answered my first question, so I will make a motion to extend water services, or let's see what it is. Motion to provide water services and with the option of sewer services at a future date if he seems financially feasible or a necessity to do so.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Further discussion, Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I support the motion. I'm not arguing against the motion, but we had a discussion, was it a house out in Belfern? About 2.5-3 years ago?
There was an apartment complex.
The apartment complex out there.
The corners. That's,
yeah, their septic was failing. And,
right.
We had a big discussion on whether or not if we provided water or sewer, one or the other, outside of our UGA, that we would require they take the pair. That it wouldn't. We never passed a resolution, to my knowledge, but boy, we sure had a big discussion about that.
We talked about this in committee with Mr. Strope's situation, and he's exploring that. Sewer would be expensive all the way across the street, deeper, and it's a pressurized line, which gives you different parameters.
Yeah,
so in committee, what we basically gave the option, Mr. Strope, was we know you need water. That's your emergency now. You might be able to save money by installing sewer now, same trenches, equipment on site. But we allowed him to say, make that choice. You can make that choice. Your financial commitment can make that, and he can make it in the future also. So that's his financial commitment right now.
Does he know what the price difference is between water only and maybe doing a bundled deal at the same time, equipment on site and stuff? I mean,
yeah, we left committee. He was going to explore those options.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and Mr. Strope is here if you want to ask some questions. I think Councilperson Mutchler and then Feria.
I don't think I
know. Okay, Councilperson Feria.
Two different questions. One, I noticed that in the recommendations on the front cover of the agenda bill, it states the individual's address, and that wasn't mentioned in the motion. Do you technically need the address to be part of the motion? Can I just say friendly amendment to put the address in kind of thing?
To tie it to that address?
You know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think it would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to have a friendly amendment to add the address of 1181 West Smith Road is the house that we are talking about in this discussion.
It's got to be a unanimous
council.
Oh, it's a friendly amendment.
A second.
Okay. And my second thing... My second thing is in regards to what Mr. Ingram was talking about, what's the pros and cons of doing water without doing this sewer too for somebody? I mean, if for the city, how does it affect the city? Sorry.
To do water and sewer?
Yeah, because you were talking about, you know, providing them water and perhaps not having to provide them sewer at this point, and I understand that's a cost issue on their side. How does it affect us, or does it, if somebody is doing water and not sewer?
Yeah.
I can answer.
Councilperson Hanson?
The whole area is essentially contaminated out there because of all the septic tanks in a close proximity.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the city's concerned, since it's not in our UGA and it's not inside the city limits, that's the county's problem. But one less septic tank in the system, there are other wells that are becoming contaminated. And so that is the advantage. It's an ecological thing as opposed to the advantage to us would be that we would collect both the water and the sewer, but, you know, on a monthly basis. So this would be just water.
Okay. Well, so that's from the financial side. I didn't know if it affected, you know. I mean, if somebody's having a well that's contaminated, isn't that has to do with their, because their septic is failing. So.
Well, the septic. Well, no? It's my understanding that right now the septic system that it is working, that it's functioning.
Oh, okay.
So it's a financial decision for him, what he can afford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't any other reason aside from, you know, the city would collect more fees if you made him do both. I mean, that didn't matter. I mean, that I just wanted to make sure there was no other, you know,
his,
reasoning.
His cost
it, so.
Today to do the septic is probably less, or to hook up the sewer at the same time, is probably less than a complete rebuild of the septic system, which in some cases can go $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. Mm-hmm. We've left the door open for him in the motion.
Yeah.
It's really up to him. And he may look at it 5 years from now when his septic system on an inspection actually does fail and say, now's the time. And we've left the door open. So.
Okay. Well, I'm glad the option is there.
This is the question I have from design type of thing. I'm not really familiar with the pressurized system with the number of people out there, but could something be done for down the road for that strip of residences out there? If, you know, if this becomes an ongoing thing, are they all going to have to tie into our pressurized system, or can something be done that then they would, you know, as a group or?
I think it has to be a lot larger in order to accommodate all of North Bellingham.
If all of North Bellingham went, we would have a capacity. Yeah. Well, certainly size. Pressurized system is a smaller system.
Mm-hmm.
It's pumped rather than... Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That down the road, we have to do some sort of LID or something like that for sewer or something for those
and
people.
And make no mistake, and Mr. Strope knows it and anyone else is on the system, they're paying a healthy rate to have the ability to go on our system. Councilperson Mutchler?
Would Mr. Strope mind identifying himself? I'm just curious who he is. Thank you, sir. Good. Sorry for your misfortune.
Any questions for Mr. Strope? Or he can stand while we do the vote, I guess. Then he can smile. He can have a good smile.
Smile or frown.
So we're going to vote on the amendment first. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
It was a friendly amendment.
Aye.
Oh, okay. All right. We're going to vote on the main motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries 6-0. Ball is in your
court. All right, thank you.
Happy drinking your home.
Yes, we've been working on it for quite a while. So thank you.
Government sometimes gets to be nice people. Okay, item D, our public hearing on the transportation impact fees. This is a public hearing, but we'll have staff present first. 5 seconds.
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. I am going to go through the transportation element a little bit just for the benefit of this public hearing, since it's the first public hearing that we've had on it. This is a culmination of an approximately two-year process after which we had hired the Transpo group.
Are you going off the one that you just handed out?
I will be going off of the documents that I handed out
this
evening. The city contracted with the Transpo Group in 2008 to update its transportation comprehensive plan as well as its transportation impact fee policy. Back in January of this year, the council updated the comprehensive plan. The next step is this impact fee discussion. The third and really last step is a concurrency discussion, which will come later on this spring or early summer. After the council adopted a specific level of service and the projects necessary in the next 24 years to accomplish that level of service with the anticipated growth that we expect in the next 24 years, the Transpo Group identified those projects, their costs, and came up with a calculation for the impact fee that development would have to pay for. Now, the impact fees are not intended to pay for 100% of the projects that we have identified. Instead, the impact fees are only intended to pay development share of those projects that are growth related. So in other words, if there is a project that actually increases the capacity of our road system in order to handle that additional traffic, that is what the development community would need to pay for. As a whole sum of all of our capital projects, the development community would be paying approximately 28% of the total cost of those projects. When you factor in development contributions, it comes closer to about 40%. So growth pays for growth in this case would mean between 28 and 40% overall, varying depending on the project. Based on all of these calculations, the Transpo group and staff have arrived at first possibility of $3,800 per PM peak hour trip. We were able to reduce that under council's direction down to a current $2,604. This is in compared to our current system, which has a range of between for single family residents, $300 for a single family residence to $4,000 for a single family residence in other parts of the city. This ordinance would adopt one standard level of, cost per trip throughout the city, something that the city has never had before. It would be able to expect, the developers would be able to expect consistency as far as what they would be paying from project to project and location to location. It also provides the applicant with the ability to work with staff to identify ways in which their development may be different and to propose professional studies demonstrating that. Aside from that, this is a methodology that has been used in many other jurisdictions. It speaks the language of both transportation consultants, other jurisdictions, and the development community. It is a responsible measure, although it will increase some impact fees for some uses. It comes after 14 years of no activity where the cost of inflation has gone up 66%. So with that, staff recommends approval. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions for staff before we open up the public hearing? Councilperson Mutchler?
You know, in my way of thinking, by having the fixed single amount instead of distances, that would encourage infilling because I don't have a financial motivation to build way out there where it's $300. It's just as easy for me now to build instead of $4,000, it's $2,600. It seems like that would encourage infilling rather than the outskirts, right?
It could certainly do that.
Any more questions for staff? Councilperson Malpezzi?
Talk to again about the bypass, you know, where some of them are got the small decimal numbers, and then the good bulk of them just have the one on the graph showed on a chart showed towards the back of the packet.
So on the schedule of transportation impact fees, which is on page 24 and 25 of the copy that I handed out today. There is a pass-by trip reduction factor. And on that, we have calculations of a pass-by trip reduction factor of 1, which is essentially there is no reduction factor. And then, depending on the different land uses, there are pass-by trip reduction factors that vary based on the different land use. What that is intended to encapsulate, if you look down at page 25, there's note number 2, where these are the trip reduction factors based on a variety of studies in the trip generation manual. In other words, these are the trips where these different land uses on average do not generate their own trips but are able to capture trips from other adjacent land uses, and it varies from land use to land use. On note 2, it states that for certain land uses, there are no pass-by trips available, and that pass-by trips are estimated for other similar uses. So, for instance, a shopping center, it has some calculations that you can put in where the average pass-by trip percentage is 34%, which results in a reduction factor of 0.66. So the long and short of it is each land use behaves a little bit differently in relation to the other land uses, and based on the accumulation of studies over the last really 40 years, this is the average that these different trips relate to, these different uses relate to other trips.
All right. It seems like they're all in the business and commercial, which kind of makes sense. You kind of doing multiple things when you go out and about. The IT average PM hourly trip rate. Oh, are these, you just pulled them out of a manual or, you know, because I got some questions on some of the, how they come to these numbers, because they just don't make sense. For example, some of the, let me pick one of the more obvious ones. A self-service car wash generates more trips than a supersized home improvement store. I just don't believe that. Unless I'm reading it wrong, you're saying somebody's going to go wash their car more times than they're going to go to Home Depot. I don't. I don't see that happening. And there's a couple other glaring examples.
And I know that it was just an example, but in that example, that was the number of trips per wash stall compared to 1,000 square feet of floor area in the discount center. So
gotcha. So it is related to the size.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you have five wash stalls, 5 times 5.5, and
so
then
the super stations, 100,000 square foot, you got to multiply it by 100.
Exactly. Exactly.
Makes a little more sense. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
Any
you.
More questions, Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, and I think I got the 28%. That's an average of all those projects, right? Because we talked earlier, impacts might pay 20% of this project, might be 100% of this project. The 28% is kind of the average that all adds up.
Exactly. As council may remember, the impact fees cannot cure an existing deficiency. So you might have a project or an intersection that right now is not working well. It's not the responsibility of development to make it right. But in a lot of those projects where we have an existing deficiency, the cure may actually add capacity. So it's that added capacity that development would pay for. So there it does vary from project to project. You might have one that's purely adding capacity where it's closer to 100%. You might have another where it's just a little, maybe one car per hour, then maybe it's closer to 10%. It varies. The average is 28%. I would like to note as well that I passed out an addendum today that includes on the back of it, if council is so willing after the public hearing, potential language for a motion to approve, which incorporates some language that we need to have since your packets did not include the most up-to-date version, including the reduction from $26.85 to $26.04 per trip.
More questions for staff and council? Okay, I'll open up the public hearing part. Before I read the host speech, is anyone here to speak for the council on the transportation impact? Anyone? We don't have anybody. So if one person is going to come forward. You can wait while I read what I have to read before you speak. Public hearings. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, of which he is, it is necessary that you sign in the sign-up sheet. We'll let that go. You know, we know people from Linden don't follow directions.
Mayor, just be in the back.
Don't or can't?
I know.
If you intend to speak, it's necessary to sign up, counter located. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. We'll let you do that in a second. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum. Clearly state your name and address if you're speaking as a representative for another person or organization. So state whether you're a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes after all the comments are heard. If you heard something to add that has not already been stated at the discretion of the mayor, you'll be given an additional 2 minutes. There are no demonstrations. He did sign up. There you go. There'll be no demonstration during inclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period, the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter a regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear as an agenda item of council decision discussing referral. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing. So, who are you and why are you here?
First of all, at the Planning Commission, Whatcom County, we give 5 minutes, so I'll be as fast as I can. Mr. Mayor, thank you. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Gary Honkoop. I am actually a landowner in Ferndale, a longtime general contractor in the community, a Whatcom County Planning Commissioner, speaking as a private citizen tonight. Also, thank you for allowing us to serve the city here and doing the Pioneer Pavilion as our business side. So which hat do you want me to turn? What I want to talk about is impact fees in general, including this. I have a permit here that we pulled on 12-7 of 09. that total permit cost with fees was $16,496.75. As of today, the same permit, 16 months later, costs $19,257.75. That is a 16.75% increase in that 16 months. That does not include anything that you may add as in traffic fee. The traffic fee portion of this permit is $418.48. So you can see why we would be concerned about that. You know, we've seen this ramping up. It doesn't matter which community you're in. You see this ramping up of fees, and ultimately we pass these on to the homeowner, and they have to finance them and everything else that goes with them. So we're in tune with how that works and what happens. Our development is the Liberty Park and Myers Estates off of Smith. There is two that we've done. So we just threw the word developer out there. I'll come back to that later. My point is that these fees are accumulative as they increase. They at some point can have a diminishing return. Too much cost, less permits are pulled, less is paid. Now, obviously, the economy has had something to do with that on the residential side, as the fee revenue has dropped drastically on the residential side. Now, that's unusual to have that big of a dramatic downturn. I mean, in the 32 years we've been in business, in 1982, 83, 84, we had a pretty difficult, challenging time during that period, but I don't think we've seen it quite like this before. Construction cost currently is very cost sensitive on the residential side of construction. Any additional cost that is passed on the consumer, and that reduces the affordability of housing. Currently, the market will not support any additional costs. As you all know, sales are stalled. This only adds to that burden. On the commercial side, though, I think it's also really important to take a look at this. Now, myself primarily work on the commercial side. My partner, Roger, handles the residential, but I work on the commercial side more than anything else. A number of the businesses have migrated out of Bellingham to lower cost, more business-friendly, affordable Ferndale. I won't kid you. We help Barron's come here. We've worked with other groups coming here. And are in contact with other businesses that are certainly considering going outside. We better rush this along. Ferndale is still an attractive place for larger businesses to come to. However, the undercurrent is that, especially with the current economic challenges, medium and smaller businesses are now starting to look elsewhere, mainly north of here. As a builder, we are often contacted when a business is considering moving. Currently, I am working with a strong, viable business in Ferndale. They have about 20 employees. Their lease is going to be ending here soon, and they are considering moving north to a lower-cost area. They're now doing their due diligence, adding up their fees to build or make improvements, and what does it cost monthly to be here? That's as big of important a factor as the impact. It's important to encourage a smaller to medium business to stay here. The word developer gets thrown around a lot, as I mentioned earlier, but ultimately it comes down to real families, real businesses, and real people. So I ask you to go slow. I understand the need for impact fees. We deal with it on Whatcom County, change the hat, Whatcom County Planning Commission, deal with that. But at the same time, it's accumulative and it adds up very quickly, potentially maybe looking at this change in the impact fee for traffic and maybe staggering it so much now, so much later. I understand what you already said. We had a great conversation today. Respect this man a lot, by the way. Don't let him get away. That it's been many years since it's been changed, but now to swallow such a huge change at one time is huge. I understand the ITE manual. I understand how, and we talked about per 1,000 square foot and how that can impact businesses that add up with square footage and the cost per 1,000 square foot, so on. Like when Laos Trust came here, we helped move them in here. I remember when we paid them their $20,000, they paid their $20,000 impact fee for traffic. It is large. Open for questions.
Okay. Councilperson Malpezzi.
I had a question. The project cost you mentioned earlier, have you done some risk estimates of what that would be for the traffic once this new ordinance passes?
Related to the residential? Is that the project?
Well, I think that was a residential project you were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. With the 418 of traffic?
Yes, that is a residential. The fee as it's currently proposed, as recommended, is $2,604. The multiplication factor with the ITE is 1.02, which brings it to 2,630. Okay.
Okay.
Which less the 418 would have an ultimate impact of 2,211. Okay, but in that particular case, those lots were developed, and a fee was previously paid during the development cycle, which gets credited for half. If I mistake and speak here, Yori, make sure you correct me. I wanted to double-check this today.
Okay.
So ultimately, on those particular lots, the impact would be $1,105. But a lot that was created previous to a certain date would not have that. So there was the comment about infilling, John. I think you may have made, Councilman Merchant, I think you may have made that. If those lots were over a certain age, they pay the whole fee because they made no contribution during the development cycle of those lots. So it doesn't necessarily encourage the infilling that you would like to see. I don't disagree with the infilling. I think it's nuts that we're not infilling enough, honestly. It really is nuts, especially into communities. You know, so I should stop before I get going.
Any more questions? Councilperson Metzler?
So, Mr. Honko, thank you for being here. I'm interested in what you're having to say. So we're making a big change besides the amount.
Yeah.
Eliminating the distances. Your development south benefited from being less impact, so it was $300 or $400. Up on the hill where I'm at, it's going to be $4,000.
Right.
So we've decided, let's just, how do you feel about that?
No, I agree okay. with that logic. I do agree with it, even though it's going to impact us financially more than it would impact those on top of the hill.
So the rise of, that $19,000, which is a lot, that's changed in mostly because we've eliminated the distance issue, not because we're raising the impact.
Well, the $19,000 that we're currently at has nothing to do with the proposed traffic impact. The back traffic impact fee change would be on top of that, okay? That's through sewer and water, and, you know, they all accumulate together. We have a tendency to look at each one of these individually, but we don't look at them as a whole, and how does that really, you know, how does that impact everything as a whole?
I've built two homes, and I wrote the checks, and it's,
you know what it feels like.
Big amount of money.
It is.
More than the two-by-fours. You're aware this council did something about a month ago of delaying some of those half of those.
Right.
Is that helpful to developers? Is that just
absolutely.
One
ultimately, okay. The amount of money collected by the city remains the same. But the cost to the homeowner does go down, definitely. And the reason for that is because that dollar amount that would have been paid at the beginning isn't financed during that period of construction or during that holding period of cost. So absolutely it does.
Councilperson Ingram?
I was just going to make a kind of smarty comment here about, gee, I wish we would have passed this about 2 months ago. I could have paid a little less for my house.
My questions are actually for Yori, so if somebody else has questions for Mr. Honko, they can go ahead.
Okay, Councilor Goodrich.
You were talking about commercial development. It was stated in a committee meeting that, especially on the larger scale of commercial developments, the impact fees may not actually have to be paid because they have to do other improvements. Do you
right.
concur with that?
I do. I do concur with that. When you get to the larger retail development, and people, you know, this is our mindset that we see the large big box store. Undoubtedly, they're going to have to do road improvements to improve that. I'm going to go back to Laos Trust. When Laos was built, Sunset Avenue looked like this, right? It's a country road, got wiped out. Jack was very gracious at working with the city and I believe also with the state on securing some funds for improving that whole area. So those roads get improved. But smaller and medium-sized businesses do not benefit from that at all.
Where do you see the threshold square footage-wise or to depend on the business? The impact fees, will say, from zero to this, it would impact it, but then from then on up?
I think it's a size and a sector. Not just so size, we're going to say a larger 75,000 square foot and up, but the sector is primarily retail where they have that benefit because the retail typically has a high turnover of traffic, so they have large parking lots, they have large buildings and so on and so forth, large yards, and therefore they typically would build, they'd have to do a larger amount of road improvements for their facilities. But let's take Ferndale Family Medical. When we did Ferndale Family Medical here in 2005, 2006, I mean, Dr. Harubi, he was very upset because they were on this side of town and they were moving to that side of town and the amount of traffic impact fee they had to pay. Now, they weren't doing any road improvements at all because Nordic Way was already existing. We did do a curb cut. Yeah, we did extend the sidewalk. That's true. But other than that, that's all that we did. So medium, smaller and medium businesses will not get the benefit of those kind of credits because they're typically not extending a spur road or anything like that to put their business in. So they feel the full brunt of that. And when you look at per 1,000 square foot, it can have, you know, significant impacts very, very quickly. You know, you're here is a reasonable person, and the city of Ferndale is reasonable, right? No. Honestly, Ferndale has improved their reputation dramatically. I mean, I hear it from the outside. I've worked here when it wasn't very friendly here. It was just the opposite. And there's been a lot of work done to improve that, and I compliment you guys for trying to make improvements in this community. You guys have changed your reputation a lot, and that's not easy to do, okay? But you never know who the next planning director might be because that person can have an opposite approach in the council to what your current position is, and that's where that give and take gets to be more take and less give. And so, but consider that.
Councilperson Hansen?
Well, I'm a little bit confused, and maybe this is a question for Yori, but you made mention of the Ferndale Medical Clinic.
Right.
Yori explained during the workshop this afternoon, you made the statement that a person can transfer their impact fee from one project to the next. Why wasn't Harubi allowed to transfer his impact fee?
I should have commented on that. I didn't follow
all of it, too.
That's
in
a new proposal. That wasn't under the old one back then.
Could have been.
One of the exemptions that is listed is move from one location within the city to another location within the city for the same use. The vacated lot will not be exempted from paying all appropriate impact fees upon development. So once you've paid your impact fees, you can move up. Why with that one?
Because they stayed with the building.
And this proposal changes that.
Yeah, this proposal, you take the fees with you. Before this, they stayed
before
with
the building. Before this, they stayed with the building. Got
exactly.
It. All right.
So, and we
so
actually have buildings. We have buildings that have new tenants, and so the old fee applied, which was zero. But that's just the way it was.
The way the cookie broke.
Exactly.
Councilperson Mutchler, Ingram.
Mr. Honkin, I know you're busy. I know you're really busy. But come talk to us more. And I'll tell you why, because the last time we had this kind of dynamic, and I don't know if it was Mr. York or who it was, this guy started getting some crazy ideas about fees, and sometimes good things come out of that. So talk to this body often. I like that. It helps me out.
I appreciate the invitation. I'm concerned most about two groups. I'm not concerned about the big box stores. By the way, I really want them to come here, by the way, so that's another story. But I'm concerned about the single-family residents, because that's a struggle, and they are financing this for 30 years. And the other is a small and medium-sized business. I have to sign a non-disclosure, so I can't tell you who I'm working with. Okay, but you got a good, healthy business in this community that's looking at leaving. They got about 20 employees. You know, they shouldn't be thinking that. I'd love if they left, because maybe I'll have an opportunity to build them another building. But they should be staying here and not moving out to a lower cost. And that's normal. I mean, you have the migration out of Bellingham just for that reason as well. It got to the point where the larger businesses wanted to get out of Bellingham because of the cost. But the when you look at innovation, and that's what this business is, not very that many businesses are healthy right now. But if you look at innovative business or business and growing techniques, they come from smaller and medium-sized businesses, not larger, heavily established, clunky businesses. Not trying to pick on larger businesses, but typically that's where they come from, and that's who you want. Keep your community vibrant.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Oh, I was just scratching my head.
Okay.
Okay, any questions? No, yours is for Yuri. Okay, so we're
thank
done
you.
With Mr. Honkoop. He can sit
thank
down
you.
And enjoy himself. Thank you, Mr. Honkoop. Okay. Mm-hmm. Councilor Superior.
Okay. I know Mr. Honkoop was up. He talked about, or he kind of threw out the idea of maybe staggering, you know, staggering fees. What's the pros and cons of doing something like that? How would you do something like that?
Well, a couple of cons. The first of them is we haven't looked at it, and that's a pretty significant one where we've looked at this. And this is what we're prepared to really discuss. The other one is the costs to the city overall, the cost of these projects are going to at least remain the same and most likely go up. An idea to stagger something would likely mean that the costs, once you do adopt it, would actually be that much higher because it's making up for the short-term loss in adopting a lower fee.
Yeah, I guess I'd add here, too, if you remember from our sheet, you know, not all city projects are eligible for impact fees because not all of our contemplated future projects increase capacity. So there's that smaller universe of the future transportation improvement projects that actually increase capacity. Then there's a question of whether it's partially or fully funded through these impact fees. Not all of these projects in here, even if we collect the monies, would fully pay for the cost, the anticipated cost of the project. So if you stagger in the increase, those businesses that come in prior to reaching the desired level will be paying less than they would have paid normally, which means that when it comes time to do the project will still cost as much as it's going to cost, but you've literally collected less from the new businesses, and therefore the city has to put in the difference. So you end up subsidizing these future projects more so than what is already anticipated in the plan.
But ideally, we would have updated this much more regularly than we have, where we're making up right now for not only an outdated project list, but 66% inflation on these type of projects that – If you balance it out, the fees, and if you factor in inflation, you end up for a majority of uses, and some are lower, but a majority of single-family residential, where just adding the 66% inflation rate onto the existing fee, you get at or above what we're proposing to charge, just with inflation. And then you factor in some of those high-traffic uses that Mr. Honkoop was referring to, and it's not only size, and I think that's important to note, it's the intensity of the use. So you have things such as banks, fast food stores, where you have four or five of those, and that's the same as a supercenter, where those have been undervalued to such an extent that we're talking about per 1,000 square feet, only paying about $200 per square feet for fast food and banks. So we've been subsidizing that development over the last few years.
Councilperson Ingram did we answer yours? You had your hand up quite a while ago. You're okay? So we'll go with Councilperson Goodrich, then over to Malpezzi.
What you said brought up a thought that I had when I was reading through this weekend that I forgot about. Cumulative effect of buildings or businesses coming into an area. How does this deal with that? Let's say Jack in the Box wants to go in across from Sonic's, and then over in Hagen's, Taco Bell wants to go in there. I mean, does this deal with that, or is that part of the process? You know, it seems like that was an issue that we talked about before, but I don't see how that's addressed.
It isn't necessarily addressed in this, because it is, as you'll recall, and it's an excellent question, there are a lot of different parts to this jigsaw puzzle where the traffic impact fees is the overall average cost per trip throughout the city, where we can utilize that money for projects throughout the city to fix those capital projects or to create capital projects. We then have SEPA, where we can say that Jack in the Box comes in, and after they follow Taco Bell and Starbucks or whatever, they are now creating an adverse environmental impact because suddenly We don't necessarily have a concurrency issue, which is the other thing, but now we have an issue where there's actually possibly a danger in there, where there are so many people unloading at the same time that we require mitigation through SEPA. And, of course, you have the concurrency element as well that says if you reduce the level of service below the adopted, you need to kick it in. So both SEPA and concurrency address much more of this project-specific, the site-specific, what are you doing to your location, whereas this is more of it's the general overall impact, the collective we're all paying in.
And I'd add in, too, that if you remember, Transpo worked to come up with what they think the city's growth, the natural city growth is going to be over the next 20 or 30 years. And in that, there's some baseline assumptions that this growth is going to generate so many vehicle trips. They don't drill down to say we're going to get 6.5, you know, fast food joints and 2.3, banks or what have you, but they just make an assumption for this grouping of development as the city marches forward. And these transportation improvements are based upon that cumulative impact of all those trips. Now, if we happen to become the fast food capital of North America and get 38 fast food joints on Main Street, we would probably collect the money rather quickly, as opposed to if we became the shoe capital of North America and had 38 shoe stores located along Main Street. So SEPA will allow you to modulate individually as projects come in, because a shoe store is going to have a much different PM peak than a fast food joint. So if you get a lot of fast food joints, SEPA will pick up the difference, as well as the fees in here, as we saw, are much higher for fast food than they are for other categories. So there's a blended a pot of development that is assumed in the city over a long period of time, but the specifics are detailed in the chart, and then the absolute uniqueness of where they locate and the projects that are needed are picked up through SEPA.
But
a follow-up thing with that, too, then, are we doing the large retail establishments? A lot of times you have the main anchor store, but then they have future ideas for other pads out in the area. Are we going to have to? Are they going to have to disclose those future plans when they come in? Or
to the extent they know it. Now the plan action is just a microcosm of the city. It just takes that Main Street corridor. So there's a certain amount of development, transportation improvements that are contemplated over time because there's a certain amount of improvement on the Main Street corridor. Now on top of that, we're going to put the planned action, which has much more intensive uses than was planned under the natural growth of the city standpoint. So the planned action will pick up those specific large scales, and to the extent that they come in when they come in for a permit, they will come in and say, we've got this big store, we've got this small little outlying store, we've got these three little ones. Yeah, so they'll be very, very specific about what they plan on building.
Another really interesting thing about the cumulative impacts, too, is these fees, again, we've talked, they're not revenue generators for the city. The goal of these fees is to pay for those projects. So if you do get a anchor store come in, and if it does bring in pad lots, or if you do have a number of different lots that come in, and they do an improvement, they pay impact fees, or they just do that improvement and get credits for those impact fees, that project is off the list. And if the city hasn't had to pay for it, and if the city, if there's a lot of big projects that come in that the city doesn't need to pay for, that goes off the list, too. So in time, it will fluctuate, the impact fee will fluctuate, where maybe it creates a need for new projects, or maybe it doesn't. So it will go up and down depending on what projects have been completed and which haven't, and which projects of those that have been completed the city's actually needed to pay for, and which have been done through development contributions.
Okay, Councilperson Malpezzi, very patient.
No problem. I've just been kept writing more and more questions. You're talking about 66% inflation rate. What were you?
Based on the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index, they track the construction-related costs of transportation projects within the state of Washington, within the West Coast, and then I believe nationwide. And so what they have is a one where you can track what one is depending on the year that you're starting, and then you can calculate the inflation since that time. So, for instance, if 1997 was one, and now we're at 1.66, then you get the rate of inflation for transportation construction type. So it's a standard that people have used.
So
and
it's cumulative since 1997. That's
so since we've changed, you're saying there's been a gotcha.
The last time we updated.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Quick process question. Since we've recently, I guess, introduced new material and haven't shared that new material with the public, do we need to extend things, or was it a minor enough change that we're good?
Yeah, no, you've had a public hearing on the proposal itself, and what staff has recommended is a basic motion that would incorporate the new changes as CFA, and that's perfectly fine. All you're required to have is that public process, you know, because we want the public to come have a say, and I think we've at least had one person that was willing to come speak. Now it's up to you what you want to do, and that motion's completely appropriate.
Okay. How much are we anticipating this change is going to do to our revenues versus last year for traffic impact, you know, when this passes next year? Have we looked at that at all, or?
It's you know, do we have exactly the same year this year as we did last year? If so, you know, the increases are probably between, 40 to 50% increase. If we have a better year, then so much can change just because we had the variable of geography in there. We could come up with a calculation, but the calculation might be relatively meaningless.
Okay.
And it's really kind of crystal ballish because if we had all of a sudden a big development down to Slater, as we know, the old fee was woefully inadequate, so we get a big bump. If we had a big development up on Church, we know that the fee is going down, so we're actually going to collect less. So it's kind of crystal ballish, but, you know.
Okay.
An example is since fast foods and banks have paid way low per square foot compared to an equivalent coffee shop, let's say. If a pad lot over at Hagen's was created as a coffee shop, we might get not too substantial revenue increase because we're right about there already. Whereas for a fast food store or a bank, it's going to be a pretty significant increase because we've been undervaluing it. So it's the same lot, a similar use, but for the intricacies, it's...
Two more questions, one potentially longer than the other. Does this plan include an annual ability for us to annually increase it, you know, based on CPI or something to that effect?
On page 14 of what I sent you, chapter 15.44.090, number 2, the impact fee schedule is set out in attachment B shall be updated on or before May 1st of every odd year, so we have 2 years, at a rate adjusted in accordance with the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index. To establish revised fee schedules for each subsequent year. Wow. So using that
was
same
my
one.
Potentially short answer. Here's the longer one.
I thought that was the long one.
looking at, Karen, the thinking of Mr. Hankoop was talking about the concern for small to medium-sized business. I kept thinking of Ferndale Station. Can you give a rough guesstimate how much they, had to pay, when they moved in versus, what they have to pay under this system? Because, I view that as one of the, one of our better, smaller, mid-sized developments in recent history.
Yes, I can give you an estimate.
Okay.
Short answer. yes.
This is my longer one. You can expand upon that.
Ferndale Station paid just over $100,000. Now, one of the reasons why they paid $100,000 instead of what their estimated fee of $165,000 was because they created the connection between Walgreens and Hagen's, and that took traffic off of Main Street and put it on a private road. So $170,000, and there were 40,000 square feet of shopping center. Based on this 40,000 square foot shopping center, would come out to, and you, of course, picked one where it takes more calculation. So what you would be looking at, and I don't know whether or not Greg has a manual there.
Manual?
The actual one of the manuals for shopping center.
Shopping centers. Uh-huh. We want to call this a... shopping center.
Okay.
4-8 shopping center.
I better not be able to find the answer before you guys.
And we want week. We want PM peak, right? Day, weekday, peak hour of adjacent between 4 and 6,
3.75 times 40 would give you 130.
Why are you the calculator? Why don't
you
clear those out? 3.75.
Were you looking at me?
You were bragging about having an iPad.
All right, what was it? Let me pull my calculator.
3.75 times 40,000?
3.75, just times 40.
Times 40.
3.75.
150. So based on that, 150 multiplied by 2,604.
Yeah, 150. Similar. Let's just go with similar. Similar. Ballpark.
Almost 400. So it would, that would nearly double. Again, they would have the possibility of reducing however many trips it had, which is about a third to 40% off because they had it. So then. About 300,000.
300 instead of what, 150
or something.
So double.
No.
Double.
On that calculation, it didn't come out right for me. You said 3.75 times 40 or 40,000?
40 because there are 40,000.
41,000 increments.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's 40.
Okay. So 3.75 is 150.
Right.
Yes. And how do we get to
the? And then you multiply the 150 times.
2,604.
Oh. Because the feet.
2,604.
Times 2,000.
390,000.
Kind of.
390.
And so, their in lieu of transportation improvements was the roadway between Hagen's and Ferndale Station or in Walgreens. And I don't remember exactly how many trips it took off, but their traffic engineer was able to demonstrate how many trips it did reduce that by. It still is a substantial cost increase above what it had been.
Thank you, Yori. And I'd just like to say I'm kind of leaning towards some sort of phased approach.
Okay, Council, any more questions for Yori? Okay, before you is Agenda Bill 1104003 with the add-on information. Council action. Councilperson Goodrich.
I will make a motion here to get the discussion going, and I'll... The motion is to approve Agenda Bill 1104... That's what's written here, so... 1104003, subject to the following amendments. Adopt language including type 1 home occupations within the underlying transportation impact fee for the residents. Remove exemptions E through J of FMC 15.44.080 and reduce the schedule of transportation impact fee per trip from $2,685 to $2,604. And adjust the fee calculations for daycare centers, schools, and multifamily residential developments.
Second?
Second.
Okay, second. Councilperson Hansen?
Up until this last calculation, I was like, no, I think we ought to pass this. And then I looked at, holy cow, the actual numbers. If Ferndale Station would have had to have paid $390,000, I don't think they'd have been built. And I'm wondering whether or not a phase-in period, I mean, we've gone from 1997 to 2011, 14 years with no change, no increase, and all of a sudden we're going to the majority increase all at one point, and I realize there's also another one in 2 years because of CPI and so forth, but taking this entire bite all at once is, I'm rethinking my position on this. That $390,000 for Ferndale Station would have killed Ferndale Station.
Okay. Okay, I have Councilperson Goodrich, Mutchler, and Perry.
I kind of have a similar feeling as Councilmember Hansom. At first, I was very much in support of this, especially seeing it lowered the impact fees on housing development, which is, this group knows, I'm kind of in favor of anything to help spur housing development. It wasn't until Mr. Honkoop was talking about smaller developments that never really kind of dawned on me to think about something like a Ferndale Station or something else like that coming in, and the fact of those, I was thinking more, seeing we've talked about it so much, the large big guys doing their major developments that they're going to have to do in lieu of anyway. So I'm wondering if we can do a tiered approach like we've done in some other things, where if you're under so many square feet or use or something, that you know, it would be a different impact fee versus just a flat fee throughout the whole city.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, so I'm bringing back what I mentioned in the work session. I want to be able to do this because I want us to get these projects done. And this is a responsible and the best way to do it. But, again, it's a little bit different spin on this. I'm concerned that we're going to be at the top of the list of impact fees in Whatcom County, the highest ones. And I don't know what this looks like to phase this in over some years, but one of the things I was going to suggest if we were to pass this is I'd sure like to see what this does to development if we cut our throats, you know, by doing this. That's a great illustration that whoever suggested we do it, the Ferndale Station, and that's pretty startling. That's almost triple impact fees. And well,
170 to
390. Okay, I thought they got down to 130, but whatever. So,
well, that's up. Get the mitigation.
The mitigation. So, staff, help us out here. You know, we want to. We know you guys need to do this, but hey, this is tough.
Well, it is certainly not an easy decision. What if we had again made this decision or kept this up to date from 1997 on, we wouldn't be having this.
But would we have Ferndale Station? I wonder, because you were kind of suggesting that if we had been doing what maybe we should have been doing, that's the big what if. Would we have these types of developments that we're now enjoying? I don't know.
City administrator wants to comment on that one.
I would say yes. $150,000 for a development the size of Ferndale Station is very small. It was probably a $5 million project. This fee, I don't think, would have dissuaded. This is supposition on my part. I don't think it would have dissuaded Ferndale Station from locating because it was the right project at the right time in the right place. It's actually had a little time filling up, but it's certainly filled up now. And the hard part, and I can appreciate this, is that, you know, every dollar we don't collect today, or I should say every dollar we haven't collected in the past, is a dollar we'll never get. And every dollar we don't collect today is a dollar we're going to have to make up someday. And to the extent that reducing impact fees below what they theoretically or appropriately should be means that you're limiting your ability to use future revenues. If we do get large retail and there is sales tax associated with it, we would by default be saying that we're going to be using some, all, or most of these sales tax revenues to make up for the fees that potentially could have been collected, which means we can't use them for parks and recreation and cops and everything else that doesn't generate revenue in the city. So I can appreciate your concerns, but staff's worked very, very hard to lower this fee to absolutely the lowest amount that could justifiably be brought before you. Transpo's done this in a lot of other cities, and as you know, the work they've done has kind of driven us to a new path. So it's really up to you. I mean, you're the ones that have to live with this vote. To the extent that we do phase it in, we will certainly continue to live, but just realize that we are, by doing that, leaving some money on the table that we're going to have to pull out of another pocket in the future to to potentially make the transportation improvements in the future work.
Councilperson Feria, then Malpezzi, then back to Ingram.
I understand the necessity in having to do this, and I've been in support of that for multiple reasons. However, as seen with this specific example and just with some other discussion, that it's kind of a hard pill to swallow all at once. What I would like to see is have this go back to the Planning and Land Use Committee and look at any possibility of the phasing, because as you already said, that's not even something that we have explored at all. So if we could have some further discussion on that at committee level and see exactly what that would mean and possibilities of how that could work, whether it's phasing in or, you know, difference for, you know, small, medium, large, or just to look at some different possibilities, I would like to see that happen.
So a process question to facilitate that. We already have a motion on the table. The next appropriate motion mean to table this discussion to committee? And okay, then I'd like to make a motion that we table this to the Finance and Admin Committee on the next available agenda in what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, a week and a half? Or sure. I think someone's got a second and a comment.
Councilperson Malpezzi has a motion. Second, so we have further discussion?
I'll second.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram?
Well, my comment.
Can't the comment only be on the motion that Steve made? So
yes.
That's why I wanted to make a comment before you had a second. Thanks a lot.
There you go.
Well, that would have equally been out of order, too.
Isn't your comment is not on his motion?
No.
Oh.
I had a very important point to bring up, but it's too bad for me. It's too late.
Someone seconded to further discussion on that. Councilperson Letchler?
What is the motion?
On his motion?
I think we have to vote on this motion. The table.
Yeah. Unless you're making a comment on the table.
We all vote no on his motion.
Well, my other question, which might be relevant, is we're not, there's no gun to our head. We don't have to pass this tonight.
No.
There's not like $10 million waiting for us to grab onto if we do it tonight. So.
No, it should be. I guess I would enter in you know, it, if you want to study more, because it's a big issue, it isn't just a factor of staff coming up with a magic number. And I'll go back to when we just pulled a number out of the sky when we did a parks feel on. I mean, it's interrelated into your level of service and what projects that you have listed. So I guess to lower the fee, you're either going to have to change your project list or change your level of service. I seem to remember as a mayor going, I don't know if you grasped what you were doing when you went the highest level of service in Whatcom County, but I think now you're seeing it. So, Steve's motion's on the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so motion carries. It's tabled. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I'm going to be gone from that committee meeting in 2 weeks, and I'd just like to request a couple things. I would like, it'd be nice to know what a level service D, because that's what you're raising the question.
We do not have the opportunity to go to D at this point. We would need to wait until this fall.
But hypothetically, could we find that out, what that would bring that number to? I forgot the second question, so I'll send it in.
We have to redo everything.
Yeah. We'd have to pay transpo to come up with
at least 40. Yeah, they need to start over, basically, with level D, because it and again, it doesn't. It might actually increase the fees, but it decreases when the fees would kick in. And this is kind of things we talked about before. Today, if a large retailer if we got a permit in today for a large retailer, depending on where they locate on Main Street, they would probably need to do little or no traffic improvements, because right now we have excess capacity. So the planned action is going to look at the build out of the entire area under a large retail format, and then associate those costs proportionally. So even the first person in the door is still going to have to pay something based on the package that we're probably going to be coming out with a planned action. But today, the way the impact fees work is there is no planned action. It's all location specific. So changing a deed probably won't make much of a difference in the fee. It just means that more businesses will come in now and pay little or nothing until they erode the level of service to D rather than erode it to C.
Well, that's what I need to know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd appreciate that. I mean, that's what I need to know to vote on this thing.
Right.
Okay.
So Transpo could probably tell you that you would be able to accommodate, I'll make up a number, 10,000 more vehicle trips on D than you could on C. The projects still come in. They just come in later when the traffic is worse.
Treasurer?
Well, let's assume it costs $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 more for Transpo. I don't know where that money would come from. Currently not budgeted.
So my question is, based on what the council just voted on, does staff have a direction where you need to go right now?
No. Well,
are you in limbo?
I'm not sure what the number is. 400,000 was scary. 200,000, is that palatable? Which would mean that we would reduce our fees in half from what we're talking about. We don't have that option. I mean, you know, there are some things where we can adjust, but
it makes it hard when you talk about what wouldn't have happened or what won't happen in the future, because no one can answer the question probably whether Ferndale Station would have come here if the fees were double, triple, or five times more, or half. We could certainly calculate what we wouldn't have gotten, but for the future, it's hard to say that a business will or won't come to town.
Well, I'm going to stop you there because that's just, I mean, that your theory.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm asking council to give staff some direction. So I'll go to the maker of the motion first, then I'll go in order going to Hanson.
My only expectation was that we, you know, move it, you know, off of the discussion for tonight and go to the committee. As far as I'm concerned, staff doesn't need to do anything between now and committee. If you would like to reach out to the Finance and Admin Committee and, you know, start a dialogue of questions, I don't think that's, you know, any way out of line. And
I guess it might be fair for all of you to start thinking about if we were to phase it in, if we need to be at 2,600 now, and you want to wait a year, 2 years, 3 years, then the question is, what should it be now? And if you want to go in 3 years, what will you be comfortable, and what should the number be in 3 years? So it's really, I mean, this isn't based on any study. This isn't based on, this is from your gut. If 26 today is too much, how much is enough today? And then when do you want to reach 26? And, of course, when you reach 26, you're going to have to be above 26 because 26 is today. So it's that, what feels. We scientifically and from a policy standpoint, you've heard mathematically what it should be. Now, politically, you just need to feel what that comfort level is.
Okay, I'm going to go in order of Councilperson Hanson, Perry, and then over to Metzler.
My understanding of the motion to table, the reasoning behind it was to allow the committee to look at some phase-in options. One of those options is to come back and recommend to the council that they go to the whole enchilada.
And the committee will do the phasing.
They'll take a look at it, and then it'll probably be tweaked further when it comes here.
No budgetary implications based on that action. Councilperson Feria?
I'm fine with what Mr. Malpezzi said. You know, okay. Fiore wants to reach out to the committee beforehand.
Yeah, go to Councilperson Mutchell and over to
him. I remember my question. If I was at committee that day, it'd be nice to see what the rest of the county is doing. I mean, are we close to Bellingham? Are we way up there? I'd be nice to see what their number is as well. And I think what it is great is sticker shock. That illustration, that was a big deal. Maybe tomorrow I'll feel better about it. I'll feel good about it.
Well, since we're still discussing this after tabling it, I'm going to say what I wanted to say in the first place. Nobody at this table has said this tonight concerning Ferndale Station. We have put in place a deferment ordinance where they pay part of your fees up front and part of your fees when you get your final inspection or certificate of occupancy. Ferndale Station's individual stores get their certificate of occupancy when that store goes in and is ready to unlock the door. Not at the time the station's built. Just because Ferndale Station is framed up, stuccoed, and ready to go, the individual stores don't pay their the second half of their fees until they get their certificate of occupancy. So they'd be phasing in anyway.
Okay. Any further discussion, Councilman Goodrich?
As far as my direction to staff would be to keep the fee for homes the same, but look at phasing, maybe over 2 years, the retail commercial aspects of it. But
have to see it. I don't think we can have a different vehicle
trip. We must
trip
have the same
per
cost per trip.
Home versus I think it has to be uniform.
But we can we'll check.
Just for my curiosity, legal ramification, they've passed. I mean, they've looked at transpose information. Remember, we had that challenge, or we had a potential challenge on the parks. Mm-hmm. So we've established what our traffic improvement should be. This fee is calculated on that. If we go away from that fee, do we get a chance of a lawsuit coming the other way?
Probably not, only because we're talking about reducing the fee. Yeah. Now, we could theoretically be sued by someone who thinks that our fees aren't high enough.
Well, no. That
I mean, that's it seems bizarre, but there could be someone out there saying
that was the threat during the parks. You've identified the improvements. We still argued about if that list was accurate.
Right.
And now you're not charging enough.
Right. But I guess on the other side, you know, the 2604, whatever it is will be absolutely defendable in court. This is what Transpo does every day.
But that's on hold right now.
But that's exactly
on hold. Goodrich.
Can you do a thing? I've made this again for staff to look up a flat fee for the whole city, the 26, but do an economic development zone type thing to where if you locate in that, like we have now with the city center, that if you do something there, you don't pay as much fees as someplace else.
You can create
something like that.
You can create districts, lowering one, raising the other ones.
Or do they have to average out the same, or could you say, okay, we're going to do the 2604 throughout the whole city, but along the Main Street corridor and at our three interstate things, we consider those economic development zones, so therefore it's a lower percentage.
Yeah. But then the city has to pick up. The costs are the same.
Yeah.
So the city, someone has to pay for the remainder costs. Yeah.
And we're starting to slide back to where we were, where we had different projects in different areas, and where you locate makes a difference.
Well, I think council has given staff a pretty clear direction that they didn't have before, so
yep.
I think you know where to go. And thank you to Councilperson Malpezzi for basically saying you don't have to have much. The committee will work all these solutions and have wonderful solutions. I'd like to let's get the low-income water, sewer, storm discount. Can we get that through before we have the students?
Move to pass.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passed, 6-0. Okay, let's take a quick break. Let's have the students out here, and then we'll go to the storm presentation. So, students, you can line up here on this end. Wonderfully notes that you have to look at.
When you do math on the fly, but that's just what we're talking about.
I guess this is the first time
I'd hate if it was what we just said was inaccurate.
Yeah, we can double check.
We're talking about residential lives, right?
But the real example of at Ferndale Station.
But it's also, you know, in the economic.
I don't remember them sweating.
And
I wrap my brain around it.
But in this economy, Paul,
And then where is the cover though? Because once you start adding zeros, oh my gosh, 250.
They probably got a better bid price because of it. That was a scary time for them.
But I mean, where is that magic? No, I mean,
the vast majority of their
maybe.
I don't know how Sonic. They did an average of Sonic. Sonic is a huge.
We got fast food and the bank. Fast food, the bank, and Woods.
Yeah.
So, your favorite part of the whole trip? There's an awesome hotel. It's down a little alley with six rooms. It's unbelievable. It's like a bohemian city. It's like they're going back in time. Of course, you went to Louvre, so I mean, the Louvre is just
Louvre.
You can go there.
Every time you go there.
Yeah, that tells me.
Was it anybody on strike?
I'm
afraid they're always on strike. They're always on strike. We've been there, well, probably four or five times to Paris and the Orangerie, where Manet's, Monet's water lilies are. It's been closed every time we've been there. It was closed once by 2 years for renovation, but other times they were on strike. That's amazing.
The Walgreens side.
Cassoulet? Do you have any cassoulet? It's kind of a...
Three of
the
square
easiest way to say it. It's one of the better dishes. Oh, really? Yeah, and people are unbelievably friendly, probably. Paris is huge, isn't it? It is just, you know, it's so damn bad. We've never seen everything, you know, that we wanted to. There's always new things for us.
So we'll go at 7:45. So you got this, you know, a little under a minute.
But it's totally against.
But that was only a couple of years.
So what don't you like about the iPad? With the limitations. I don't think it's English.
It still doesn't do the flash.
Yeah, you're just like Joey.
How's everybody? Can you see this okay?
That was one of the things.
Steve, can you see this presentation okay?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be more like for them.
Oh, yeah. No, you're just the bottom level.
You did.
The lights are on?
The video's on Comcast. The video's on Comcast or Zancast. I know you can't
do that. Do you do Netflix at home through your Comcast box?
No. I didn't know. Do they have that capability now?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, they do. Oh.
They do. I know.
Okay, we're going to go back in session. Okay, this is the ordinance and resolution, the storm pond construction. This is our storm waters. What do we call you? Stormwater
specialist.
Specialist.
Wendy. So this is number 2 in learning about stormwater presentation. So what is stormwater? It's not only this before, but stormwater runoff occurs when precipitation from rain or snow melt flows over the ground and hits impervious surfaces instead of soaking into the ground. So we had questions come up, and I'd just like to, you know, start going over this. If you guys have questions, just let me know. So what is a utility? I thought since it came up, I would look into it more. So I looked it up, and there are multiple definitions. Wikipedia, you can even add your own, right? But one of the ones that I thought was decent was this one, a public service, public utility. Public utility is sort of a different thing than utility. And this definition was a business enterprise, such as a public service corporation performing an essential public service
and
regular regulated by the federal, state, or local government. So I guess the first question is, is stormwater system an essential service? Mark, there's a test at the end.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm watching it.
So that, you know, is a question everybody probably has their own opinion about. It's kind of blurry, but
That's a spell checker.
Yes, you know how.
Just it's usually right. Even straighten out. If you have headaches, that's it.
Oh, that's not snow. Those are sandbags.
Ladies and gentlemen, a brilliant Ferndale High School graduate, Landon Tusker.
I can even add and everything. But anyway, sorry, I'm not trying to distract anyone. Yeah, I could just hold it. This is the thing, right? Here's
Oh, that's better. Yeah.
How can you go?
Well, anyway, I was
very clear.
Rabbit ears.
Okay. Well, anyway, slightly clearer, slightly straighter. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Landon.
That's giving me a headache.
If it's an essential service, probably your opinion of it might depend on where you live. These are some examples. You guys have seen the Crestline Heights example before, which is on the far right. On the left there is someone who's pumping water out of somewhere in their house, illegally, I might add, but because they don't have a stormwater system in their neighborhood. So when we do have a stormwater utility, this is more what it should look like. So we have our downspouts coming from the gutters, which goes through a small drain in their yard to the little green PVC pipe you see coming out there. That other side of that catch basin has that bigger pipe, which comes out at the headwaters of Cedar Creek. And then from there, it goes through the city stormwater system through culverts and pipes, eventually Cedar Creek connects with Shell Creek, and which eventually goes down to the Red River in Bellingham Bay. So I ask this question to kids when I go talk to their classes, and the sewer system and the stormwater system so the sewer system on the left there goes to the treatment plant. The catch basin water system goes to a detention pond or your local water body. So the purpose of our stormwater system is to convey stormwater, but also to detain and treat the stormwater and get the pollutants out. That is the main reason that the federal government thinks we need a stormwater system. So we need it for flood control, also for pollution control. So the Clean Water Act basically is a federal governing law that allows the state to give the cities permits saying that they need to clean up their stormwater before discharging into waters of the state. So according to the Department of Ecology, about 75% of the toxic chemicals getting in the Puget Sound are carried by stormwater that runs off paved roads and driveways, rooftops, yards, and other developed land. A big push right now for the, you know, Puget Sound starts here. But if that's not sort of close to home enough, we have other statistics like stormwater runoff is the number one pollution problem in urban areas in Western Washington. And that untreated stormwater is not safe for people to drink, and it's not recommended for swimming. And there's also things, you know, locally here, like in Skagit County, the shellfish harvesting, those areas. So in my opinion, based on the definition I had, stormwater is a public utility. Essential public services are flood control and pollution control, and those things are regulated by the federal government, the Washington Department of Ecology, and the city of Vermont. So then the question becomes, how do we fund this utility? And if part of the pollution was money, that'd be spectacular, right? But it doesn't come from the sky, so stormwater used to be funded by just the general fund, which can come from a variety of places, taxes, that sort of thing. The problem that cities found with that is that there's no dedicated source of funding, so there can be fluctuating inputs into the general fund. Things are always becoming more expensive. If there's cuts, there may be cuts to different places. And with stormwater, it can kind of be one of those things that's out of sight, out of mind. So if you live in a place with a storm system, it's not as big of an issue because maybe you're not thinking about the roads that you have to drive on. And in the summer, people to think, you know, why do I need to fund this? It's sunny out. Doesn't come back in their minds until it's October and they're up to their knees in water. And then how do you plan and implement projects, capital and even maintenance and repair, when you don't know how much money is going to be there from year to year? So cities have found that the solution to that is to make a utility fee, so then you have a dedicated source of funding. And how did we come up with the fee? Originally, when the program started in 2007, we had the comprehensive plan from 2005. So Mark took the information from that, you know, what was in there, what we needed, and then added running the stormwater program, including flooding and public outreach and the other things, like monitoring that the permit requires, and divided that by the number of users, more or less. Between 2007 and now, we've actually been running the program, and we have more detailed information about how much it's going to cost. Also, prices are coming. But, so that's kind of where we're at now. Mark is up.
Sure. And we've looked at various scenarios for the storm fund, and we have an immediate need, at least for 2012, to finish the Main Street project, Douglas to Church. And we need to deal with stormwater on that stretch or that stage of the project. We have federal and state funds. We have federal funds committed. We've committed to finish that project by the end of 2012, the Main Street Douglas Church. So we could either do storm retention ponds along the route or divert the storm water all the way Douglas to Church to a regional storm pond. We have, as a city, think the best option is for the regional storm pond. We already own the land. And the cost of the storm pond, to include capacity for Main Street, Douglas to Church, as well as Church Road, with a little bit extra, is estimated to be $1.8 million for construction costs of a storm pond. Proposal is to, in 2012, issue bonds of about $2 million so that the net of that bond issue is about $1,850,000. You have to pay cost of issuance, legal fees, at the bond rating service, is to do a 20-year bond in 2012, probably a revenue bond, as opposed to a general obligation. And the proposal is, as a means to pay that debt service on a 20-year, $2 million bond, is to stair-step the monthly, even though we bill every 2 months, the monthly storm fee from $8 this year to $10 in 2012 to $12 in 2013. That with a one-time boost of an interfund loan of $100,000 to be repaid in 2014 would give us enough revenue to service that debt. So that's kind of the finance part of it. This proposal tonight implements that plan in terms of rate increases and sets a separate fund up, fund number 412, for the bond construction as well as the bond debt service for 20 years. It would take that difference between $10 and $12, $12 to be implemented in 2013, take that $2 and actually put that money in that regional storm debt service fund, construction and debt service fund. So that's the proposal. Right.
I think Councilperson Ingram is first.
I will make a motion to approve Agenda Bill 1104-005.
Second.
Okay, moved and second. Further discussion. Councilperson Mutchler was first, then Goodrich, then McKenzie.
Wendy, I have a couple of questions. First of all, thank you very much. That's helpful to me. You provided a definition of a utility, and it might be because I had some questions in a committee meeting about whether this was a utility similar to traditional utilities, phone, water, sewer, and so on and so forth. The definition you provided for us as a utility, I think, could be applied to every single city service that we do. Okay. I wrote down the word streets. I think that your definition of of what utilities could be applied to our streets. And I don't think you and I would say that streets are a utility. Okay. Maybe we would.
Yeah. Well, I guess, like I said, you can come up with a bunch of definitions. Another one I saw was a system connected by pipes conveying, you know,
sure.
if you want it, how specific you want to get. I agree that, you know, it's pretty broad.
Yeah, if you include the police department, would be called a utility based on definition, as I always kind of look at.
The police department probably has a federal mandate. Yeah.
And so my concern about this is, I'm repeating a bit what I said before, is we need to build upon. I'm in total agreement with that. My difficulty is with the funding.
Mm-hmm.
I think there may be some other ways to do it. And what occurred to me was this, and I'd like council to consider this. This is the only public service that we will do as a city that I can think of where we're charging the citizens of Ferndale the exact same amount per family, per customer. We do police, fire, schools, libraries, parks, trails, roads, streetlights, sidewalks. And we don't add up any of those services and divide it by 3,500 homes and bill people. The cost to the citizens based on a very traditional American method of proportion. People who earn more or people who have more pay more. I, as a property owner, perhaps pay more for police protection and fire protection and streets and all these things than somebody that has a home a third of my size. That's kind of how we do things. This is the only thing that we're doing that we're charging me $12 a month, the same as the young couple struggling to make their mortgage payment, $12 a month. And that's kind of my problem with this. We're treating this one thing differently.
I remember that you said that earlier, and I do think there are cities like Bellingham which go through and do impervious surface for each area, and what usually comes out is that most single-family residences have close enough impervious surface that they're put into the same bracket.
Yeah.
So
I understand that.
I don't know that switching to that method would necessarily.
And I don't like that method either, in part because you can tell. I don't know the answers, but I think that most of our stormwater problem, or at least half of it, is our streets, sidewalks, gutters, and curbs, as opposed to the roofs of people's homes. And their driveways. And their driveways, you might argue, a lot of those driveways, the water spills off to the other grass, unless it spills off in the street. So it's maybe the majority of our runoff problem is a street problem.
And it, you know, there are a lot more streets probably than, you know, roof area. I'm not sure on that. But so that there's one aspect, which is the flooding. And I don't know the answer to percentages of streets versus roofs. But there's the other aspect, which is pollution. And that could be from cars on the streets.
Again, a street problem.
Right, or pets. You know, we have to do fecal coliform for the program, and then it becomes, do you tax them if they have two dogs?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I guess it's sort of hard to get that specific for me, but I'm.
Well, I noticed on my property taxes, which we all got a few weeks ago, the county has a flood tax. Mm-hmm. I said the wrong word. And mine's $60 a year. But for the person that just lives down the street whose home was assessed half of mine, it's $30 a year. So that's analogous to what we're dealing with there. I would say is a flood fee is similar to a stormwater fee. It's closer than my water and sewer bill. So, again, this is going to probably pass tonight. I feel like the Seahawks, I mentioned this to Greg, they make the playoffs. No one's going to believe they're going to go anywhere, but they hope they make a good showing. I wish we'd reconsider how we're funding this thing. It's just so different than everything else. I just don't think it should be tacked on our water and sewer bill. And I think when it was $3.50, it didn't seem like very much, and that was in 07, I think.
Yeah.
And now we're up to $12 a month, and that's just problematic for me. And that's my little speech.
I would just ask for direction on that. If you wanted to bring it up later, what you would suggest, because it sounds like impervious surface wouldn't necessarily work.
I don't like that either.
But no. I know, but then what would it be? I guess I'm not.
Well, one idea is, I know we have some banking capacity in our property taxes. It won't cover the $12, but maybe that's a compromise. It would cover some of it. We can keep this thing under $10, and our treasurer could tell us whether that would get us close or not. I'm not the number cruncher. I hate property tax increases, but it would, because it would hit me more, by the way. If it's in property taxes, I'm going to pay more than Mrs. Larson down the street. But it seems more equitable. This, to this council member, seems more equitable to me if it's part of property taxes and part of the general fund than a tax that's equal to across everything.
And I did look up, like, I think I said this at that council committee meeting, the one, I guess, and we can look into that, property taxes, the county, so I don't even know if that's something that we'd work out through that. I guess it'd just come through the general fund and then we'd allocate it.
Yeah.
I'm not.
As we have in the past, we've thrown sales tax revenue at storm in the past. We could throw property tax at the storm fund. The debt service, once we get past the interest only, our $2 million is, on the spreadsheet is $160,500 per year for 20 years. Our debt, we do have some bank capacity of approximately $92,000 right now per year.
So it's too short.
And so would that be able to go into a fund specific for stormwater?
Yeah,
like I was saying, that was sort of the problem.
Tax and anything.
Nor would we, but property tax we wouldn't see until May of next, May of 12.
Yeah, correct.
We wouldn't see money until May of 12.
We don't need the debt service until the end of 2012.
So, again, I guess it'd be a problem of dedicated funding. And then also, like I said, the one, I guess, rebuttal people could add to that is that just, like, well, like you said, it could be a bigger house, so then you have more property tax. I don't know.
Yeah, so in a sense, you get the imperviousness, you know.
Well, impervious is different because it's based on size, right? Is property tax always based on size or also based on what's inside? Yeah.
I want this council. I supported this a month ago. I voted in favor of us moving on. And it was my colleague, Councilmember Hansen, that started talking about his struggle with this thing. And I thought, it's only $350 going in there.
I want to speak to that.
Sure.
I'll bump Commissioner or Councilperson Goodrich because you're
so
dramatic about answering.
I can wait, but I just want to.
Okay.
I want to
let's go in order. Councilperson Goodrich, then Malpezzi.
I was looking at today. I pulled up the off our city's website and budget, the debt schedule for all the things that we owe money on, all the different things that we owe money on, and I noticed in this last year how there wasn't any money set aside for the pond, even though it was brought up. I know of last. I'm pretty sure I brought it up last year. My concern as far as moving ahead with the Main Street project, that we'd have to do something along this line. My other concern is with this, because we're doing this because of the Main Street project. If we weren't doing Main Street project, we wouldn't be building this pond. My concern is we still have phase two of the Main Street project going. Are there any other costs that we're going to have to incur that we're not talking about tonight? Tonight is this storm, but are we going to have to buy any right of way? Have we gotten that squared away yet? Luis is here. Other costs that may be associated with this that we really probably should look at as all in one pot, not just because of the stormwater, but what else is it going to cost us as a city to finish Main Street besides this pond?
I'll have our treasurer respond.
That's a good question. Council Member Goodrich asked that question via email probably over 2 weeks ago now. Public Works Director is finessing the cost estimate. Should be available perhaps this week with a new cost estimate to answer your question. I don't have an answer tonight. I appreciate you want to look at both Storm and this Main Street project at the same time. But they are two separate funds.
I know they're two separate funds and things, but they're all tied together.
Certainly
and,
they are.
And
yep.
It's an additional cost to the city that we need to be aware of as council for approving this. We also may have to come back to something else down the road. I don't know. And are we going to have to look at other bonding things or other costs or other loans or whatever?
No, you're thinking just Storm?
I'm thinking what's it going to take to finish Main Street? We know it's going to take $1.8 million because we've got to build the pond.
Sure.
What else is it going to take to finish this Main Street project in costs? And I think we as a council need to know that total dollar amount because we're addressing borrowing money. Is the $1.8 million going to be enough money to borrow to finish Main Street, or are we going to have to come back and say, you know what, we need another couple hundred thousand dollars because we have to do right-of-way acquisition, or we ran into this issue, we're going to need, you know, a couple hundred thousand more here or there. I'm almost wondering if we need to wait until we get that whole dollar amount and look at it as, what's it going to take to finish Main Street? And then to make our decision.
Okay.
And I think it was last year when I think right around the time updating our 6-year debt, and you know, we made the recommendation to phase the Main Street project, and we looked at for that second phase, and on that there we said, you know, we've got I think at that time we actually had the $750,000 on Fed money that was still outstanding that we didn't know about. But since then, we have obtained that. The city was awarded that additional funding. And we said, well, the still the outstanding cost, or we need to figure out something on storm. I think, Mark, you put together a spreadsheet, and we looked at, like, increasing to $1, $2, $3, or $5. It was probably more than that at the time. And what was approved was an increase of $1. And meanwhile, then staff, we applied for a DOE grant. We were hoping to obtain that grant so we could use that then to pay for a good portion of the pond. We didn't get the DOE grant. So then we knew we would be back here talking to you again about how to finance the stormwater pond. The stormwater system, stormwater pond, is what's outstanding on the Main Street project. And that's what we've been trying to address.
So the right-of-way cost, there's no additional right-of-way cost that we may have to incur?
There is some right-of-way. Are you talking about for the street or for the pond?
For the street.
For the street, there is some right-of-way that we need to acquire. And so we've estimated a number, and on that there, we still have to move forward with the process. And Jill, the property owners, you never have 100%. I mean, where you're confident, this is how much it's going to cost. So we plugged in a number, and we're hoping that's going to be enough to cover it. We're not going to know until, you know, we proceed with the process. But we've plugged in money, and we're hoping that's going to be enough to cover.
Councilperson Malpezzi, then Hanson.
Microphones, people. We're not doing microphones tonight. Okay. Anyways, no, that I had lost my mind. I would have just blurted that out. That was the only thing I had to say. I have a lot of similar concerns with John and Brent, and you know, I'd encourage my esteemed colleague to, if he's not in support of this, don't vote for it, because I'm not voting for it in this current fashion. I didn't vote for the last time we hiked the rates, and I'm not voting for it this time. And it's about priorities. We're sitting here getting ready to bond out another $2 million that if we weren't paying for something else, we wouldn't have to, bond this amount. So it's all, the same pot of money here, and we need to make some hard decisions on, are we just going to pass everything on to the citizens, or are we going to start, paying for what we can actually afford?
Councilperson Hanson?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say regarding this is, if you don't figure out a way to fund the pond, you will be returning $2 to $2.5 million back to the federal government. That's going to be a fairly good-sized bond issue that's going to have to be, no one's given me a solution where you're going to come up with that. You may have to bond the first phase of Main Street in order to return the money to the Fed and the state, because it's about $2 to $2.5 million.
We have $4.1 million for the Main Street project.
So we would lose all of that, all of 4.1. Okay, so don't do the bond, and there's your liability. We already have agreed as a council that we would do Main Street all the way to Church Road. That's been an agreement, because it was made very clear to us that if you approve phase one of the 1A or what, the phase that they're currently working on, that they have given us an extension into 2012 to do the second phase. Without the second phase, you return the money for the first phase. That's the deal that we agreed to. John, I'm going to rebut a bit about the property tax. Only from this, I've never suggested that we should necessarily fund the stormwater pond with property tax. I have listened to you talk about that, but I've
never. I didn't mean to imply that you did.
Oh, okay.
If you heard it that way, I didn't.
Good.
Mean.
Because.
I just noted your struggle with.
I struggled with was a 60% increase in 2 years and not phasing it in over more time. And the comment that I made about the property tax was I find it really interesting that we absolutely refuse to look at property tax increases, yet we will go to fee increases readily.
I agree.
Now, having said that, I'm really concerned that this doesn't if this doesn't pass, that we put the staff and the council in a real rock and a hard place, because I haven't heard a solution on how to fund this pond without the stormwater increase. John has suggested part of it should come from property tax, and we could pass that. I don't know that we're willing tonight, but you could pass a resolution tonight that essentially states that you're willing to take all of the bank capacity plus the 1% allowed by law next year. You will need that kind of funding in order for the bond people to issue bonds. The other change in direction that I'm uncomfortable with is making it a general obligation as opposed to a revenue bond. They are different animals out there in the bond world. If you go to property tax, it becomes a general obligation bond as opposed to a revenue bond. I think the compromise of moving to $2 in 2012, the $10 in 2012, and $12 in 2013, that really is a compromise that makes this work. We're obliged to do this, folks. If we choose not to do it, give us a solution on how to do it.
This person much slower than Malpezzi.
It's a solution that I hope we can come up together, but I noted three possibilities, and I don't like any of them especially, but I like them more than the fee. I mentioned the banking capacity of our property tax, and Mark mentioned $90,000 a year. A 1% increase in solid waste is $110,000 a year. A 1% increase on the utility tax itself, which I like the least, is 40. I mean, we're at 6.5% on our water sewer tax, right? So 7.5% brings another $40,000 a year. Those are, to me, better ones than the fee. By the way, with all respect for Steve and Brent, I support the projects. We need to do the projects. At the end of the day, if we have to do the project this way, maybe we do. But my problem is the way we're funding it. I want to be very clear about that. And so I think there are some other ideas, maybe a combination of things to try to keep that fee down. And I've given three. You've asked some suggestions: property tax, solid waste, and utility tax. And they all stink, but the fee stinks more to me.
Councilperson Malpezzi?
I support the projects as well, and if I just failing to mention that I support it doesn't mean I'm against it. Maybe I should always lead off with that, but I definitely support the concept. No way am I suggesting we give $4.1 million back to anybody. I think there are different alternative solutions out there. You brought forward three. This hasn't really been, I'm not on this particular committee. Maybe it just needs a different committee's eyes on it to have some discussions. I'm not sure. But I'd like to see those discussions happen. And, unless there's something's going to happen tomorrow after we pass this that you're going to give the okay to start construction, boom, 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 or something. I don't see why what's the time need that this got to go today as opposed to 2 weeks? And if this waits 2 weeks, what are the implications there?
Yeah, because we've been probably working on this for about a year and a half. But we were asked to pencil out a schedule to try to make sure that in 2012 that this project goes out to construction goes out for ad early spring, or we're constructing between June and September. So what would it take to do that? And in that schedule, we show that for the pond, a decision would be made by the end of March. And so that's why we've been kind of pushing to get this through and get a decision made.
So there's no flexibility in your schedule. You said schedule is so tight that, you know, 2 weeks is going to
throw it out. Well, we've allowed quite a bit of time to get to this point. And so just in our schedule, I mean, in order to move forward, we go to add.
Councilperson Goodrich?
In a way, I feel like we as a council are between a rock and a hard place. And, you know, we're damned if we do, if we're damned if we don't. And we're damned if we pick whatever way we're going to fund it, because somebody's going to be paying for it down the road. Unfortunately, I'm not in favor of Councilmember Mutchler's idea of using solid waste monies to do this. I'm not really. I reluctantly think that I can see is just the way to go is the way we proposed is just do the fee increases and do it. I know it's, you know, going to be tough on some people or whatever, but I don't know how else we can do it and come up with the dollars that we need to come up with to pay the debt. And, you know, if we do a partial raise of, you know, property taxes, and we still got to raise the fee to make up the difference. So, you know, you're going to raise the fee $2, you're going to raise it $1. Still, the fee has to go up, you know, to do it. So, frustrating. Yeah.
Councilperson Hansen.
Well, I think a 1% increase in the solid waste tax, while it's possible, we're probably at the point of which the solid waste companies might be looking elsewhere. And I think we're at 12%, that's it. It's not going to be advisable to go any further than that 12%. In fact, there was a time ago that we were looking at, if there was any way possible, maybe we could hold that thing at 11. So, you know, I think that's off the table. If you take the property tax as an example, there's no cushion left. And if you get hit again with, especially if you know it at budget time, which we didn't this year, but the fire district is going to come in with, and they almost always eat up all of your available increase in property tax. It comes in that way. It's been that way every year that I've been on the council, that increase and the property tax increase are the same. We've held back and said, no, we're going to not do the property tax. But for us suddenly to come out and say, oh, well, we're going to raise the property tax 6%, you take away all of your cushion for the future. I just can't fathom that, frankly. I think, Steve, you mentioned perhaps a different committee. This has been vetted by two committees. The Finance and Administration Committee has looked at this, I believe, at least two meetings, and the Utilities Committee has looked at it at least two meetings. You only have one. You have two more committees, I guess, that could look at it, but it has consistently gone in front of two committees. And I think that this is the best that everyone's come up with. If you look at my history as a council person, I have always resisted fee increases, and I've always resisted utility increases because you don't need to hear all of the reasons why. But I voted against my share of utility tax increases, and I was very reluctant to put the storm fee in the first place back 8 years ago when it actually happened. And right now, I'm between the same rock and a hard place. I think we've got to put the fee in place and fund this project. I'm going to be probably a little less conciliatory when you come in and ask for $13 or $14 on the stormwater fee.
You recall I asked for $20 and I got shot down.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I recall that.
$5, $10, $15,
$20. That's for Ingram and then Feria.
Well, I do think we need to move this forward. We cannot keep dragging our feet on these important projects. This council, as a body, for the last 2 years, has consistently, adamantly refused to increase property taxes. At 2 years' budgets in a row, we've said it's the wrong time, the economy's not right, you're going to go out and hit people with an increase in property tax, you might as well go shoot yourself in the head because you just committed political suicide. And to suggest now that we're going to go out and increase, what's our bank capacity, plus one, five?
5.6.
5.6? You can imagine what kind of a reaction you're going to get out of the citizens of Ferndale over that one. They'll take that $2 increase in 2013 and not blink an eye. I mean, how many complaints have we had going to 8? How many complaints do we have going to 10? My phone has not been ringing off the hook. I have had one person ask me over at Babes, wow, what's that stormwater fee for? And I told him, it's pay for stormwater. It's a utility like everything else. You got to take, you got to treat it. You got to filter it. It can't be just dumped into the rivers anymore. Oh, okay, cool. That's the only comment I've got. So if we go what are we going to do? 12 by 2012. 2013. I don't think you're going to hear a complaint. I think we need to fund this project and quit sitting here. Wasting my time.
Councilperson Feria.
I understand that people keep saying they're in support of the project, and that's great, but if you're in support of it, then you have to find a way to fund it. And I agree that property tax is not the way to go. I prefer seeing fees increased rather than taxes because then it makes it I like showing that it's for something specific. And if anyway, did we have a motion on the floor yet to pass this? Right? Can I call the motion then? Again, I'm calling the motion. Call a question.
Okay.
Should know that.
I'll second that if it needs to get voted on.
It does.
We're voting on
a motion to pass it.
A motion.
All in favor of approving calling for the question, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. On the regular motion, roll call vote.
Councilmember Malpezzi?
No.
Councilmember Hanson?
Aye.
Councilmember Feria?
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram?
Aye.
Councilmember
Mutzler? Nay.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries.
If we're going to keep having roll calls, can we maybe switch up the ordering that it's done or just raise our hands all at the same time? I really don't like this go down the line and see how everybody else is going to vote. And I don't think there's ever been any controversy as far as, you know, somebody saying yay or nay. You know, out loud. I don't know why we keep having these roll call votes.
Are you suggesting somebody might change their vote based on what somebody else just did?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Sure.
Oh, how high schoolish is that?
Boy, I guarantee you, this is not a popularity contest amongst us.
Okay, moving on.
Thank you, Council.
Mayor reports. Now, remember the 12th. You're all aware of that. 5 o'clock at WeCo.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully have everything figured out. We have a gift. If you still want to contribute, see Sylvia.
I was supposed to bring a check to give Sam tonight to give to Sylvia, and I completely blew it. I'll be down tomorrow.
It's still on 12th. Short period of time, so Linda's only going to be there for a little period of time. And I don't want you to be shocked at seeing her. I think she's at 99 pounds. But, boy, nice way. I really appreciate it if all you could do your schedule to make it there.
Well, I will be there.
It would mean a lot to
me. I'll be in Oregon.
13th, we start the new security at the park, so we have the situation there. Saturday the 9th, Mel, I don't know if you're going to do on your council reports. I'll reserve that to you. EDC is this Thursday from 2 to 3:30 at City Hall. Got it? Okay, that's it for council reports. Mayor reports. Council reports. Councilperson Hanson.
What Gary was alluding to is the tree board is having another Arbor Day tree planting session. This time it's quite a bit less than it was last year. Last year we did 29, they did 29 trees with the help of some old settlers and Heritage and anyone else that wanted to show up. This year we're only doing 7 total. And they're all purchased trees this time, none being transplanted. Some flowering trees now for in between the cabins. And
are they all Pioneer Park?
No. there will be the final corner here by Dr. Hovander's office. We'll have another sweet gum put in. And then the one Stewartia that was taken out by one of our local, who knows, I want to say he was a drunk, but not, I don't know that for sure, but he wanted the tree worse than he thought the city did. So the pot's going to be moved so it's not as close to the door of the tavern, and we're going to plant another Stewartia in that pot. So those are the trees that are going to get planted.
Great.
9 o'clock.
Any other council reports? Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, thank you. When I was gone, I learned that Councilmember Ferrier was going to be with us until early June.
But yes, I still don't know an exact date.
Okay. I'm interested in the if there's interest in council in moving forward and trying to fill that seat or punting on this. I think Councilmember Ferrier has given us kind of a nice opportunity to move forward on that and do everything except vote on it. And I think there's some things that we can do. I'm interested in that. I don't know if the interest of the rest of the council is on something like that.
I think last time we briefly talked about it, we kind of threw it out there as, you know, we were open to discussing it at some committee level and looking at different options, not necessarily, you know, making a decision or, you know, anything, but, you know, discussing some options that we could start to do in the meantime. And, you know, I might suggest, I know it's really not a public health and neighborhood services. However, it just seems like lately that committee has had a pretty light agenda. Maybe we could throw it on there, especially since you and I are both on there, and we both seem to.
The reason I bring it up is maybe there is an interesting council in filling the seat, and that's fine. But if there is, we could conceivably do it relatively soon after Council Member Ferrier steps down, and with plenty of preparation. If there's interest in doing that, then we need to come up with an interview form or whatever we want to do.
You could just direct staff. We have the form that people filled out the last time where we had four people. We had the interview set up. I mean, it's not like it's a new or rare occurrence. So you could direct our clerk to recreate what we did.
I would be fine with that.
I think it was waiting until I knew the exact time frame I'm leaving, and we still don't know that. It's still going to be I'm hoping the next couple of weeks.
But you could start looking at the form, and if you want to change the form. So we could recreate all the documents and paper we had before. It's not difficult.
I'm just saying, regardless of when you actually leave, there are things that we can still do.
Well, there was always the talk of, are you going to appoint or are you not going to appoint? And I don't even know if that was ever really decided on.
That also kind of depended on whether it was June or August.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you have to remember is also occurring in June is the filing date in the first week. To go out and actually seek applicants prior to the filing period, not knowing who's filing and who's not filing, I think developing the form and having it all ready to go, but I think actually declaring applicants being accepted until we have a resignation is not.
So consensus, Sam finds the form and information we had later, not a big deal.
I'd say F&A committee, though.
Yes, Finance Administration is the most appropriate committee.
I agree. My only suggestion was just the workload lately. Okay. You know, that was the only suggestion. Of course, before any decisions were made, it could come back to this body anyway. So.
Sure. Why don't we get it to all council members, and they can study it, offer suggestions, and move on from there.
I don't have any comment. Email on it. Cool. Great. Credit. I like it.
They can individually email.
Yes. Feel free to individually email me.
Thank you for our clerk. Councilperson Mapezzi, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I had not really a discussion, more of a comment. You know, I don't want to come across as, you know, I'm against anything, but it has to do with the recent public blogs that Sam has done. And, you know, I think it's, you know, in my opinion, and I haven't read them all, but in my opinion, we're getting close to the, you know, going over the line as you acting as a public official, or if you're doing this just solely on your, you know, your free time. Obviously, it's been on your free time, but, you know, some of the Some of the comments, it sounds like you're responding as a city clerk, and other comments, you know, you're clearly acting on your own, and I'm just, you know, although I can, I think, tell the difference readily, I concerned that some others in public may not be able to make that separation because they don't know you as well as I do. I guess I'm a little concerned with what everybody else thinks, the perception of the public, and you know, I'd suggest maybe we, you know, sometime in the near future, sit down and, you know, discuss, you know, what is okay and not okay, as opposed to getting into a lengthy discussion tonight about it.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate, though, for me to be allowed to respond really quick. Sure. If you're going to call me out of public meeting.
Sure.
First of all, yeah, I suppose you could sit down and you could, I guess, try to determine some type of specific job duties for me, but I do have a job description, and part of my job description is city communications. It's an expanded role versus what Linda did, so I understand that there are certain people who are not used to it yet. But I specifically was brought here in part to help communicate city business. Probably, I assume that you're discussing a specific blog post recently regarding an announcement for the mayoral election. Every post I make is a case-by-case basis, so it's insanely impossible to make a black and white or blanket statement on what I do. In this case, I was specifically, and it looked purposefully, called out by some anonymous person as to what my opinion was of the election. And so I felt it was appropriate to respond to say that I'm completely out of the election. They continued to try to get me to answer questions regarding city business, however, in terms of certain council members' previous votes. Because it is my job to provide the public with information on city business, I provided them with a specific answer to that question and then, meanwhile, pointed out that we have a bunch of information on our website and they can check it out. The post kind of changed, obviously, to other city business, and so that's why I was more comfortable remaining on there. But my job specifically is city communications. I am basically the communications manager for the city.
Well, I guess what I'm going to, you can't just, you know, one post do city business and then the other post 2 minutes later go into your personal views in support of, you know, a particular person.
I don't think I supported a specific person whatsoever on there. I think you're completely inaccurate.
Never did.
And I never, let me be very clear. I very rarely even have personal time. You know, when I go on the blog, it's looking usually at Ferndale City Business. The only time that I post personally at all is about things that have absolutely no relation to Ferndale, you know, and that should make pretty well sense. If I'm commenting about Ferndale, I'm being paid by this city to make comments based on city business. And I don't think anything I've said has been controversial whatsoever. I'm trying to respond based on the administration's views on issues, and when I can, when there's an opportunity to, I guess, explain when you've passed perhaps a majority resolution or made a majority vote on something, I provide the public with specific information about what the majority of the council has determined for the future of the city of Ferndale.
Like I said, you know, this is beginning of the election season. I think, a more lengthy discussion and understanding, you know, would be in line.
Let's be clear, and I don't mind saying on the record, that's administration. Sam is the employee of the administration, as is Mr. Young, Mr. Burnett, Mr. Peterson, Ms. Marlega. So that's administration. So be careful that line that you cross.
That's why I was suggesting to the administration we sit down and discuss it.
Okay, but your objective is to not to direct staff.
And I don't believe I was by suggesting we sit down. You know, you and, you know, Greg were obviously, included in that sit-down discussion.
As long as you're clear, your job is not to direct staff in their daily duties. Councilperson Ingram?
Well, to sit down and have a discussion.
That's a direction.
You're directing staff.
I'm directing the mayor and Mr. Young to have a sit-down discussion. Yeah, I believe I can have a discussion with the mayor, the head of the city staff, to suggest we have a meeting. That's not directing anybody to do something.
Councilperson Ingram?
On a little bit lighter note. On a little bit lighter note. Let's see. How many people around here in this room got kids? Any size kids?
Any size kids.
Yeah, multiple. That's a kid. It's a kid to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. April the 30th, Silver Lake.
Oh.
Okay. Come on up. Bring the kids on a fishing pole. It's opening day of trout season. And Mel and I and the rest of Ferndale Kiwanis will feed you the best
fish and breakfast you've ever had.
But if they're over 16, they can't win any of the prizes.
No, they can't win any prizes if they're over 16. But we got, well, they could win. They could buy tickets for the raffle prize.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They could win that.
So April the 30th, we start at 6 o'clock a.m. Go till 1?
No, 11.
11, 11. Yeah. So bring the kids, fishing pole, eat.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I just wanted to comment on Councilmember Malpezzi's concern just recently. I kind of had the same concern. Mr. Taylor and I met, sat down, had a discussion about it, and I felt good afterwards, and I think, you know, it was a worthwhile time, and I don't have the concern like I did before I sat down and talked with him. And I would encourage anybody else to do that as well.
Staff reports. Okay, staff report. I'm going to go to Public Works, and then Public Works could transfer to our stormwater person because they could kind of really show Mr. Hansen how many trees you really can plant in a short period of time.
Well, provided they're only that big.
Oh, now we're getting technical.
And those are already
so
dead.
Do you want
yeah.
to say how many trees we are planted on a Saturday in, what, 2 hours' time?
No, it was less than that. It wasn't even an hour.
Well, that counted my
month.
Oh,
okay.
Well, but to be fair, me and Brennan Bo went and dug little holes everywhere, so they just had to put them in.
Oh, your holes were really lame. You had to be digging. They're well watered.
You guys gotta shift weekends here. You're always doing these things on the weekends when I cook.
It's a plan.
Is it the plan? Then I won't worry about it.
No, we'll have another opportunity.
Okay, but we're still on Public Works. No, nothing. City Administrator.
A couple things. One is we got notice from the county auditor's office as far as the dates for any resolutions or bond issues or whatever it might be, any ballot issues we want to put on the ballot, just kind of put it in the back of your mind. If we want something, some issue on the November ballot, we need to pass the resolution by August 16th. If we want something on the primary election, which is in August, we need to file it no later than May 24th. So I'm thinking that if we are going to have any issues, it'll probably be on the general election. But if anyone feels strongly to the contrary, let me know. Then we obviously need to start talking about these things because May 24th is going to come here rather soon.
If I could add really quick to that, we also are required when we do these things to appoint pro and con committees, and the timing on that is very quick in that. And so if we are going to do this, we should be very aware of the details. Yeah.
And one last thing, I don't know if our clerk was going to kind of ring his own bell in this regard, but you may realize that he went to the...
Don't be taking his thunder now.
...to the clerk's conference, so I'll leave it up to him to tell us what goodies afterwards he was
there.
Able
don't
to...
Be he gets to...
I figured he was so shy.
He gets to toot his own horn, and if he doesn't toot it enough, we'll toot it.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Then I'm good.
Okay. Treasurer.
Nothing.
Planning.
We have until May 1st, or the public has until May 1st to submit comp plan amendments. Does do it every year, so there's a public notice in the Ferndale Record going out. That's it.
Okay. Police. And our city clerk, who's just earning his money by getting scholarships, doing great things, borrowing software.
Now you're taking his stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Well, first of all, I went to the Washington Municipal Clerks Association conference this week. Part of that is because, as you all are probably likely very aware, you happen to vote for a contract for me that requires me to receive a certified municipal clerk designation within 5 years. Based on some discussions that have a lot of people, that kind of made me panic a little bit as to whether or not I can even fit in a lot of stuff to do that. But so you're aware, it does cost money for me to do this. And as part of that, I went to the Clerks Association conference. I am also a new clerk, so it was fantastic. While I was there, it was odd because I started kind of getting looked at a little bit as the public records guy even there and still kind of social media presence. So I actually ran out of business cards while I was there. I should have brought more. I didn't even think about it, to be honest. When I was a journalist, I never handed out cards, so I didn't bring very many. But we ran out. We have a lot of people actually communicating with us now, other clerks that want to know kind of what Ferndale's doing. with social media and public records management. So that's great. The other thing is we've been looking at better public records management, especially request tracking, trying to look at our options for that. And right now I track stuff in Excel spreadsheet. We have just now saved between $10,000 and $15,000 because the city of Lakewood is going to be giving us their software. I got hooked up with them at this conference. And it's a wonderful way for us to continue to centralize our public records request tracking. I'll be working with the police department to do that as well because they obviously get a lot of requests. And so I was pretty jazzed that we got that. On another note, I got I was informed today that I received two scholarships to go to professional development training in June. It's a week long. That's also required for my CMC. I have to go to three of these for your information. It costs $1,000 to go to this. And I received a scholarship today so that the city of Ferndale, the city taxpayers, will not have to pay for that this year. And I was also given another $400 that will go towards next year's. So I was pretty happy that I was awarded that. I kind of crossed my fingers and put in some applications, and I got both from two different organizations. So cool. That was pretty cool.
You want to tell the council so they don't hear the media how you've changed the dress code at City Hall?
Oh, I saw that.
I've been required and mandated by Mayor Gary Jensen to inform the public of my addiction to Argyle. However,
I duly noted. Thank you.
Spun that little press release to talk about our lean meeting process because it's a fantastic way for the city of Ferndale to work on streamlining our processes and saving taxpayer money.
I saw that picture from last Friday. Marcy showed it to me upstairs. It was absolutely hilarious.
I took the picture because the staff was very honest in pointing out that they think the mayor is a fashion dork. And I know nothing about fashion, and they're probably correct. So they all embarrassed me, and I took it rather well.
There you go. Move to adjourn.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Wow. Whoa.
This
is good. I don't know how you got it. I didn't know what it was, but I was being confused.